Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Ooh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to episode 44 of The Carpcast. How are we doing, Mark?
We're not doing bad, considering I've had 3 hours sleep last night.
Yeah, because...
Four carp, one lost, and four bream.
Ah, are you fishing your local big pit?
Yeah, it's nice, warm, uncharacteristically warm easterlies have switched it on. So, I was only fishing for about 16 hours there. Was it a cheeky overnighter? Certainly wasn't a quick one. And, remember last time we spoke, when I was down there? I was in a swim, I mentioned it's you either catch multiples or nothing.
Yeah.
I was in that one and I had four, and lost one.
Wow, any size?
Two up a double, the 21 and a 23.
But we had 28 degrees in Blackpool yesterday. It's extremely warm. I've seen evidence of fish spawning on various videos people have posted up. It seems weird because I felt the weather was behind a bit. I know it's early May, but I felt the water temperature was cold, and it normally is this time of year. And then we get 1 week of over 20 degrees, and that's it. They all want to spawn. I don't think they're going to spawn properly. What I think you'll find is they'll have another go later on. The temperatures are dropping later this week for a start. I mean, I might have a chance to get out fishing myself after this week's out of the way. Obviously, I've been decorating and moving house and stuff, and just finally got an internet connection. And I'm, bad timing to do it in May when everything's kicking off. But lakes are certainly going to kick off this week, and I've already seen political correctness brigade saying you can't fish. They show signs of spawning, but they're not going to spawn properly this week. They might have a go in certain lakes, but it'll be one group of fish as opposed to all the fish in the lake, and that's tends to be what happened. But because people have got this we mustn't we must leave the fish alone when it's spawning time, which is right. You should never fish for spawning fish. I think people get oversensitive this time of year, like the first sign of it, right, that's it, shut the lake down, all right, leave the lake shut for 2 weeks, and they're there. I'm not saying they haven't spawned on some lakes, but I guarantee there'll be fish coming out with spawn in their belly for the next 3 weeks.
Have you seen it's mainly an American phenomenon, these social justice warriors online? Mainly students who have literally got nothing better to do. Listen, there's a couple of Joe Rogan podcasts where he just absolutely rips the shit out of them, and it is funny. But we've got the same thing in carp fishing. You're social carp justice warriors. Someone's holding a fish a little bit too high, they jump on it, and it's the same sort of thing. But what you just said about, the weather there, the first fish I caught, I pulled, I had a couple of leeches on it still.
And exactly.
The second fish I caught is milting in me cradle.
Yeah,
it's both ends of the scale.
You find in any group of fish. I mean, I know from Cromwell always shut the lake when it spawns, but again, they're kind of, you know, very sensitive to the fact, you know, the fish are going to spawn, and they move into one of those, like the nature reserve, they call it, the kind of shallow area, and Nathan shuts the lake the first sign of it, and they basically lose out on 2 weeks revenue, because they might have look a bit spawny overnight, and it's one group out of, you know, maybe 250 fish, there's maybe a group of 20, 30 fish or something having a little dabble, you know, the premature ejaculators, and they yeah, and all of a sudden he's left with the lake thing, you know, because obviously once they spawn they normally rest the lake for 2 weeks, but they haven't spawned, like maybe 20 fish have done it, and he's shut the lake for 2 weeks, and it's like thinking we could really be open, because like they haven't, and the fish that are in there, you know, are still looking like they've got bellies full of spawn, and you can be too sensitive is what I'm saying. Yes, obviously, you know, we should let the fish kind of do what they're gonna do, but I always think people are very overprotective about carp when, you know, they're generally an invasive species, and we stick hooks in them for fun and drag them out of their home. So, like, there is a line to be drawn, but where that line is, like you say, the social justice warriors, while they're tapping away on their keyboard, probably draw that line at ultra sensitive. And, you know, and I don't even believe in reality they would do the same thing. You know, a lot of these people, like the, I don't want to focus, this is not a rant, it's not a Jamie rant, we're not going there, we're not going deep. I'm just thinking you can be oversensitive this time of year, and yes, the fish are starting to group up and look a bit spawny, but they, you know, bar extreme circumstances, maybe in the deep south, if it's super hot, if we had 2 weeks of this weather, yeah. But we haven't, and I'm sure the water temperatures have been behind from, you know, the usual temperatures at this time of year, so let's not get carried away.
No, I've got to say though, from, you know, last week when I was down on the big pit, you know, the water to this week is so much warmer. You know, I was playing a couple of fish, I've just gone in my shorts and paddled.
Yeah.
You know, I don't generally feel the cold as much as others, because I'm just daft and I like swimming in cold sea in Iceland. That's kind of numbed you up to a lot of things, but it has, you know, this last week, you know, the temperature's really, really jumped. So I think shallower waters are going to be having a thrashing, just
certainly, just, yeah. I mean, a week of 20 odd degrees in May, then it's going to happen. I mean, it wasn't just 20s, it's been high 20s. I mean, it's overcast today. To be honest, it feels super carpy in Blackpool. The pressure's 1005, it's roasting, but you know, that sticky, warm roasting. It's overcast, it's very windy, but the wind is just super warm. You know, you walk out in it in the t-shirt and it's just like, wow, I need to be on a lake like that. So that's how it feels.
When you get 28 degrees in Blackpool, do you see lots of nice upper doubles walking around?
Yeah, they're all pushing prams though, every single one of them. Let's move on. We've got our DNA tip of the week. DNA Baits are sponsors of the Carpcast, and we try and bring you a tip from somebody who knows something about fishing, maybe more than us. And last week's guest, who seemed to be very popular, is a chap called Lee Morris, and Lee gave us a tip of the week, which we'll come to very shortly. But if you do use dnabaits.com or would like to try them out, you can go to the website and get a discount. It's a special promotion they do for the Carpcast. You can use the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout for an extra 5% discount off their already decent prices. They've got some great liquids if you want to find out how to use those liquids. Rob Hughes gave a great tip with the liquids the other week. Mark Holmes did a lengthy podcast for us. Do you remember the number on that one, Mark? The Holmesy liquid one, but
it was very, very small. I think that was an upper 30.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing if you haven't listened to it. And when I went on the DNA website to check the liquids, wow, they're super cheap, to be honest. You know, you can really stock up on those. They also do post free deals on boilies. They do some great boilies. Probably the most prominent at the minute is the Switch, which is the latest new one that everybody's raving about. But they do others, the Ocean XE, SLK, the Nutter S, and the Secret 7, which I know is a popular one. They do post free deals on those. You get the boiler of your choice, 3K matching pellets or stick mix, tub of pop-ups or wafters, and 250ml of bait soak, and it's delivered post free to your door. There's a 5kg deal is $59.99, there's 10kg at $94.99, 20kg at $149.99, and a 50kg at £320. And they are post free, and you can also get the extra 5% off using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. They do Zig deals, again post free deals. You get a 2.5K spod mix, you get the Fox Cigar liners, a sticky sweet liquid to dip your foam in, and again £30 post free to your door. Fluoro pop-up deals and all sorts. Go and have a look at their website, dnabaits.com, and use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. And check out Lee Morris's bait tip.
DNA tip of the week.
Well, my DNA baits tip for the week would be about the switch, to be fair. That bait has been unbelievable for me. I'm not really one to sort of whore out a bait as such, but the switch is definitely a bait that's changed my fishing for me. First time I'd used it was over at Hardwick. Had 14 fish out of there. I thought perhaps it's a little bit of a one-off, and went to Syndicate Waters and pretty much decimated the places. Now, how I would use a switch is put it in the right place. Without a doubt, you can have the best bait in the world. As long as you put it in the right place within your quarry, then it's definitely going to catch your fish. I've never really been one to use liquids, but the switch liquid is one of the most potentest liquids I've ever smelled in my life. Even if you taste it, it's red hot. So just obviously be careful if you do ever use a switch liquid. Don't go rubbing your eyes or anything, because it is spicy as anything. But I use that on 18 mil wafters. So switch over the top, 18 mil wafters, put it in the right spot, and it will definitely catch you some fish.
So thank you to Lee, and we'll be back next week with another DNA tip of the week.
DNA tip of the week.
We've got a few in the pipeline, and Mark's speaking to plenty of people to get some more. So yeah, hopefully it can be informative. We released the Carpcast Extra this week. It's a few days late because of my moving house and having no internet and stuff. It seems to have gone down really well with some of the funny stories on there. I'd forgotten there when I recorded Frank and others. I recorded them all for the extra, where I basically asked some questions to get stories off them, and then we did a normal interview. And to be honest, the normal interview went out on the Carpcast, but the best stories came from the questions, and I recorded some of them like 4 or 5 months ago, so I'd forgotten how funny they were. And one of the questions was like funniest experiences on the bank, and as we know, Frank's a fantastic storyteller, and just from the comments on the post that I made advertising the new Carpcast Extra, you can see that it's gone down pretty well. I won't spoil the stories, but it is upline now on the www.thecarpcast.com. You can subscribe for 1 year of extra content. I think so far there's four Carpcast Extra specific editions, and there is an extra content which Julian Cundiff's live rig talk is up on there as well, that you can download and listen to. So there's 5 pieces of content totaling maybe 15 hours, something like that, of extra listening if you are a Carpcast addict and want more content. It also supports us, it supports the show, means we can keep doing this free weekly one, and we don't feel like it's draining too much time. At least we're getting something back for it. There's loads of ways you can support us as well. You can buy clothing on the website, you can buy the 2 DVD series that I did called The Knowledge, one's on the Carp Syndicate in England and the other one's on Lac Cavagnac in France. So if you're thinking of going to Lac Cavagnac, which incidentally is fantastic, run by David, you can get a little heads up first by getting either the Frank's Connections or the Syndicate. It's just basically my guide to how I approach lakes from scratch, both Lakes Cavagnac and on Friday and I did the first one. I knew nothing about. I just turned up there and struggled in some cases, but it's basically my approach to fishing. And yeah, you can buy hats, hoodies. We got a fantastic t-shirt, the Carp Gods Giveth t-shirt, and the Carp Gods will shine on you. I can promise you the Carp Gods will shine if you purchase one of said items from thecarpcast.com. You think so, Mark? The Carp Gods shining?
Yes, I was wearing my t-shirt this week and it's now been in the wash covered in slime. It worked.
There we go.
Nothing to do with the rings and bait, it's all the t-shirt.
It's all the t-shirt, yeah. Have you seen anything on the net?
It must be true.
Yeah, it's one or two things. And we've got to take our hats off to our match anglers of Team England because they've had a friendly match with a few other countries out in Europe and they've smashed it again.
Billy Flowers and Jamie Londers taking the gold. Two fantastic match anglers. Formerly Nash, I believe they are not with Nash anymore, but they've always smashed it on the match scene. And then we won't go too deep on the England triumph because Rob Hughes, we have Hughes News once a month. He's the third show of every month, which is not next week, the week after, is it? And I'm sure he'll keep us up to date on all things England as well as his general view on fishing. Something else I saw on the net this week, I thought I'd screenshotted it and can't find it in my phone everywhere, so I apologise for not having names, and I'm going to paraphrase what was actually said. Well, it just tickled me. A lad has obviously texted his dad. He's obviously in the moment. He's caught he's caught a lump, and he's messaged his dad to come down for pictures. But you know that feeling of exhilaration, you got a big fish on the bank and like you know everything goes out the window. And the dad had made a post basically saying, sun rings, saying, dad, got a fucking chunk in the net, get down here now. And his dad had replied to him something like, excuse me? like you what? Oh, sorry dad, but it's a really big one. And it just tickled me because I know that feeling of having like the fish, you know, the one you want, or the biggest fish in the lake, or just a lump, you know. That feeling of so much so he's forgotten like that he's actually speaking to his dad. And it just it typifies the good things about fishing, that absolute high that you get when you know you when something special happens, or you catch a special one, or you know, first bite out of a lake or whatever it is. It's that we go fishing for the surroundings, the escapism, for the camping, for the, you know, the cooking on the bank, for, you know, the peace, for an escape from your job, like all that kind of serene feeling. And then it goes into absolute chaos when, you know, that buzzer rips and you pull a lump over the net, or, you know, a special one, or your first one, or whatever. It goes from that beautifulness to the absolute adrenaline, you know, heart racing, ringing your dad, going, I've got a fucking chunk in the net. I loved it. It's just something about that typified the good things about carp fishing to me.
Yeah, I wish I'd have seen it myself. But have you ever done that moment where you've opened your mouth or done something that you think, oh, maybe I should have done that in the heat of the moment? Because I know I have. I found I caught the twin at the early hours of the morning. Yeah, I'm absolutely over the moon. I phoned a mate thinking he was actually fishing himself. No, he was at home in bed and his wife answered. She wasn't happy. I understand.
I've done it a few times. When you're on a syndicate and you're all, you know, especially a low stock one where every like capture or bite is really significant, and you're kind of sharing the info with a group of you that have got together and met on the lake or whatever, you know, it's like a common thing. And I've been woke up in the night a few times by people. In fact, I had a story. It was when John McAllister was fishing the Essex Manor. And it was when he caught them all, once he got amongst them, he caught them all fairly quick. I think he had like two or three of the big ones in over one or two sessions, you know, within a week sort of thing. It might have been over 2 days. I apologise if I get this wrong, because I probably will. I was in Ibiza with Roger Bacon, And I think he'd had, like, the first one, one night I spoke to him in the daytime, and he knew we were going out that night to whatever club. And then, so I told Roger, yeah, John's just had whatever fish it was, a Northern Linear or Stella, or he'd had one of the big ones, and he was catching them. He had a few fish over a load of bait that he'd put in. And I think we'd been to the club, we'd got home, I don't know what time it was in Ibiza, maybe like 5 a.m. or something, and we're back at the apartment chilling, and got the phone call off John. I think he'd had like the other two big ones or something. I forget what order the fish he had, but he ended up with all three of the A team, which is Stella, the Annie, and Northern Linear, is it? I think he had them all within this period of time. And yeah, I just remember him, you know, that excitement. Obviously we were buzzing, we were on a high from the club, and you know, it was like 5 a.m. 4 a.m. or something, it was middle of the night anyway, and you know, to get that phone call like, Rog, John's at the Annie or whatever the fish was. And then, you know, he's talking in that really excited tones, you know, he's obviously sat there with it either in the net or sack, or he put it back and already done pitch or whatever. But you know, that high when someone, that immediate period after a fish. Yeah. And then, and I love it, I don't mind being woken up at any time, day or night, for that story, you know, especially when it's a mate or something, you know, because you know that high. And I've done it. I remember when I caught the banana common from Colmere, I had two fish and lost one that morning, like early hours. And I remember, and don't forget, like when I fished that, like I didn't even know there was any carp in there. I'd heard the rumours, but I hadn't seen them, you know. I wasn't 100% sure of what was in there, and what was in there was supposed to be mega. And when I had that fish, I remember a couple of phone calls I had, you know, when like you're talking, you can't breathe because you're that excited. And I've had it a few times, you know. I've received many of those phone calls over the years, and I've made a few of them myself. And then, you know, there's no bigger high than that feeling. It's great. And then that post I put on Facebook, it just tickled me because I know the exact situation. And it's the exact situation where you would forget you were talking to your parents, you know, maybe you've never sworn in front of your parents, and it's the exact situation where you might. But I thought it was great anyway. Anything else you've seen on the net?
It's on the net, it must be true.
A couple of quick ones. We noticed, well, I saw this on Simon Crowe's, you know, a week or two back, his editorial in Carp Talk. The Carp Society self-appointed hierarchy are now trying to revoke Tim Paisley's Life membership after he called out Dave Mannell.
Can you revoke a life membership? Isn't that the whole point of giving someone an honorary life membership? Yeah, then it can't be took away.
Yeah. Tim Paisley has done more for carp fishing than any of the current people combined.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, I can understand why he's done it. I mean, he has called out and he's accused David Mannell of crimes, you know, to try and get resignation, you know, to maybe save some of the Carp Society's money, you know, because he's probably going to use the Carp Society money to fight the legal cases, which won't happen if he just resigns. You know, he maybe escapes more serious charges and the Carp Society retain their funds. So, I mean, that would be the preferred outcome for everybody. But, you know, Tim's called him out very publicly, and they're obviously trying to revoke his membership. I hope they can't. I would like to see the legal standings on that. We'll see. Our prediction didn't quite come true, did it, with the UK's biggest carp? I thought the next capture would be parrot. £70. Yeah, no, the parrot.
It's been out at a slightly less massive weight of 64.
Yeah, I think again, when we had that mild winter and it came out at a British record, and you know, we only thought we were coming out of the winter, now it's only going to get bigger. The weather set us back, didn't it? I think, you know, we had a week of really cold weather. Some lakes froze. Sorry, my phone just bleeped. But the water temperatures went down, a week of super cold weather, and They've obviously, you know, some fish have gone back. I saw that Bite Mark had been out this week as well, which is the biggest fish that's just made 50 in the past from Stone Acres, and that was down in weight, that was like 45 pound, but I think a lot of the other fish in there are up in weight, like a pound and a half. It's done a hell of a lot of fish so far, Stonies. That is covered, the Bite Mark story is covered in this week's Carp Talk, which is out today, Tuesday. We'll talk about that in a little while when we fill you in on everything in this week's Carp Talk. But it just shows, like, not every fish is hugely up in weight, and you know, we predicted Terry Hearn would catch it at £70, or I did, and that isn't the case as yet. He may still catch it at £70, but it won't be this
October,
week.
November. Who knows?
Yeah,
when you look at a fish of that size, you know, 68 to 64, that's 4 pound. But if you look at the percentage of body weight, it's nothing in relative terms, is it?
So I think it's time to get this week's guest in. I know you've been out on the bank this week, Mark, and you went to interview one of the old school carpers who's caught more big fish than I can count on my little fingers. Mr. Dave Moore, you went to see him, didn't you?
I did, on his own lake somewhere in Yorkshire, and it's a lovely lake as well. You know, I'll tell you what, it so much reminds me of Pit 2. It's deep, gin clear clay pit. You know, even wow. The colour of the water when you're looking down on the fish. You know, you're looking at fish that are like, you know, 3-4 foot down, and it's, you know, it could have been. Anyway, I'm digressing. Yes, Dave was good enough to invite me to, you know, we fished tonight and we had a long chat. But before we start, I'm just going to explain how the interview starts. I said to Dave, you know, there's, you know, anything that stands out, any, like, you know, funny or interesting stories that, you know, you want to include that I can, you know, lead into. His reply was, he looked at me with his a puzzled look, and then he says, "Oh, there's the time I got shot." So I pressed record right then, and that's where the interview starts, with Dave telling the story of getting shot. Enjoy.
Okay. So I'll introduce. I'll be Dave. Oh, there is that time I got shot.
At Wentworth, got shot me at the 177 room fire. The guy that shot me didn't even know he shot me, because he shouldn't have been there, same as me. He were poaching and I were poaching, but I were fishing for carp, and he were popping pheasants off in undergrowth here on second dam, just as you go over at Stile. I don't know if it's like it now, but when you used to go into second dam, you used to get over Stile, and you used to walk round a bend, and there was a little island there, a bend, and then some trees, some hawthorns that you used to have to go through.
Yeah.
Or getting in back of them, in front of the hawthorns, for a nice little high yard. Everyone was going straight past it. So I'm in there on the bed chair, and with two rods out. It used to knife us all, you know, but, you know, until this, it were autumn time. You know, so we all stopped about 11 o'clock or something like that. And when it got dark, I used to walk to village. I used to take a car, four parkers up in village, and then walk back down the end. And I could leave my gear there. So the so you couldn't get caught. I'm sat there, you know what you do. And I saw the light flick on behind me. Really, really, you know, off on. You should think, and I heard, I know what silence gun sounds like.
Yeah.
It was silence. And it came straight through trees over the top of my head. Next thing was, this was that left arm flung around. I didn't hear it this time. Flung around, just like this, just to almost spring me around. And I was off my bed chair. And I thought, what? You know, I've got that. And then, you know, it got me on my funny bone.
That's got over.
Yeah, and to say I was in pain was unbelievable. I flattened all my gear down, still didn't start shout out, because I thought to myself, I was more bothered about not getting caught fishing rather than the fact that I could be shot, killed the next shot. And cut a long story short, after I was laying there, it must have gone off somewhere. I realised then that luckily it does skin me when it sort of bounced off the bone and come out the side. But I mean, I were in a lot of pain, and so I had to pack up. And you can imagine, I've got to get all my gear to the car park, walk into the village to get my car, drive my car back, pick my gear up. And I've only got one arm, basically. Yes. This is not going to work. And I went to Rotherham Hospital. And of course, I'm thinking, what can I say? And I was only young. I'd be about, I'd be 81, so I'd be about 20 years old. And so I mentioned, I said I'd put the arm on the spike of the fence. Because I'd once done that as a kid, but yeah. it was straight through the cheek of my backside. And anyway, they swallowed it all. Well, I thought they swallowed it all until policemen turned up. They knew exactly what they were and notified the police. So this policeman turned up. Says, do you mind if I ask a few questions? How did you say you did it? It's on a spark on fence. And the doctors don't think that's the case. In fact, they're pretty much 100% convinced it's a gunshot wound. I says, yeah, it is. How have you got shot? And of course, I'm sitting there, and I'm still, all I'm worried about is getting banned. Yeah. And of course, so I told the cop the whole story.
Yeah.
And he went ballistic with me. Absolutely ballistic. You know, the fact that I tried to hide, you know, this up just because I was concerned about getting banned from fishing somewhere that I shouldn't have been doing at 8 o'clock at night or wherever it was. And anyway, so yeah, they said, you know, we've got some idiot running around, went with estates with, you know, with a firearm and a rifle shooting off, you know, and you're worried about getting banned. Funny enough, they caught him.
Yeah?
Yeah. And they caught the guy, who was a local, they caught him, and they found out, because, you know, when they caught him, he ended up admitting to a few things, and of course they questioned him towards that date and time. And he says, I would probably work in that house. Do you really? And he ended up getting time.
Well,
so that's my story about being shot.
Yeah. Take it you didn't even know he'd shot you?
No, I had no clue. Didn't even know with it. This is because, I didn't get involved with it. Because, you know, the injured part, I mean, you know, like the 80s. I mean, it weren't like today. There'd have been compensation claims and God knows what else.
Oh, yeah, you're going to get a phone call every day for that.
All I didn't want to do is get out. And Tom would have barely fenced that. Tom find out and said what you were doing there after dark, and you're getting banned. That's what I was worried about. Yeah. Not getting banned.
Did you get away with the fishing though?
Yeah, I've got to say. Yeah, so that's probably the probably the most bizarre one. Yeah.
I've got to be honest, that's got to be probably the best opening 5 minutes of a Carpcast chat we've had. That one, the story about getting shot. I'll do the intro we were speaking about now, but we're talking about getting shot. I thought we're going to get this one out. Welcome to the Carpcast. I'm sat here now with Dave Moore, long time Yorkshire carp angler. Is it 1976 you started?
Yeah,
only one then.
Yeah, there's some that really, if anybody can remember that's still alive and listen to this, will remember that summer of 76 was absolutely glorious. It was the perfect summer. You know, it started getting hot in April and it stayed hot and hot and hot and hot right the way through to September. And consequently, the reason I started carp fishing was at that time I was match fishing. I was fishing for Rotherham Juveniles, and I'd even fished in Division 1 National Benzola, and I'd done a few trials fishing for Juvenile English teams. So, you know, I've always been a fisherman, you know, I can't remember not. But in 76, a lot of the lakes around Rotherham area, we got very low and a lot smaller, and it was amazing how you suddenly found that there's carp in some of these lakes. I mean, one of them that I can remember quite vividly, Elsica, Orsica Res. I mean, that got to about a third of its size, and we knew that the gut carping, because they caught some small ones when we float fishing. But that was when we first saw them, and it sort of whet my appetite. I wouldn't mind catching one of that, especially bigger ones. We're talking bigger. We're still talking best double. But they were, compared to a 3-pound bream, they were enormous. My interest, my appetite were wet. My dad, who was obviously a big influence on me fishing, used to say that they were uncatchable. And I've got to say, a lot of people say they're uncatchable. They're a waste of time, uncatchable. I know then there was a pond, and it still exists, run by Phoenix Social Services, but then it connected to, almost exclusively, to British Steel, a pond called Ravenfield Ponds. And it was, everybody knew that Ravenfield Ponds had got massive carp, like they did. I mean, subsequently found out they weren't that massive. But from a point of view of catching carp, it was probably the best bet that you could come up with. Because A, people carp fished it, so you know that people carp fished it, they must be catchable. And quite a few of the old Yorkshire carp anglers from way back, Tag Barnes used to fish Rainfield. In fact, I once met him there. Didn't know who he was at the time. He must have been fishing there illegally as well, like most of us. So I decided, with a mate of mine, who had tin carp fishing for quite a number of years, but has just come back to it, we decided that we were going to go and try and catch a carp. Rainfield was the place to go and try. So that's where it all started. Very little information other than Stillwater Angling. I think that was about the only book I'd read at the time that had anything about carp fishing. Went to the library in Rotherham, found the odd few books in there, and it was floating for us. Bread paste and free line, quite very basic. Very basic, but Neil Pete, who was my mate that I went with at the time, his enthusiasm was not going to be thwarted by all the negatives, and we off we went. First time I can remember, we went at night, and I think it got to about 2 o'clock in the morning before we actually started fishing for prunes. I can't even remember anything to do with the techniques that we were using at the time. But we ended up fishing for the cruise, which was the next best thing. Come daybreak, I met my first ever carp angler. Came at first light, and he came and sat up over the side. And you could see in the mist, these two rods. The curiosity was too great to keep me stuck, sat where I was. So I walked around, and I think it was probably Skiddy. I couldn't be certain, because I did speak to him, and I just go, so it probably was. because Skiddy's a bit older than me, so you look at what the tackle, etc., that we were using. You went back and looked at what we were trying to use, and we totally, the stuff we were using was totally inadequate for the job in question. But more to the point, we hadn't really got a clue what we were doing, but the second time we went with a slightly different approach. I think we decided to fish with processed cheese, and again we went at night. I think it was a Friday night, and about 1 o'clock in the morning we suddenly started to see lights up and passing out. I mean, it's not very big, so it's not far away, but we never heard them. And again, after a little while, the odd little torch going on and on and off, we decided to have a walk around, see who it was. And in a line with three guys laid on ground sheets, two rods, errand buzzers, carp fishing. And it's weird because the first one we come to, he actually spoke to us and talked to us. It's a good job he did, actually. Because if he hadn't been nice to me, several years later, when I had become his boss, I'd have made his life hell.
Karma has a funny way.
It has a funny way. And you know, he asked us what we were doing and all the rest of it. And I said we weren't having any luck. And he says, oh, you need to do this. And he wound one of his rods in. And basically, a free line lunch with me. He says, you want to try this? So, following week, we went and, you know, we went again on a Friday night, this time for a long lunch with me. And we both got a bite at Loston, you know. So, you know, we then blamed not the lack of catching, not on the, we now knew what to do, but we hadn't got tackle that were adequate to use. Just by some luck, I managed to get a job for 2 weeks working in steelworks, where during shutdown weeks, and earned enough money in them 2 weeks to keep myself out of the carp fishing gear. And then the first time we went after we'd done that, because Pete did it as well, you know, we caught our first carp, you know, again from Ravenfield Pond on free line lunch with me. And that were it. Hooked, match fishing, out at window. I think I can't remember where I did with all my gear, because I'd won quite a lot of gear as well. I've only got two items in my match fishing gear left. I've got a Bruce and Walker 12-7 float rod and an Abu 506 close first reel. That's all I've got left. I mean, at one stage, I'd have five or six rods set up. You know, if I were fishing a big mouse, depending on where I were. I don't know what the hell happened to him. I think my brother and my dad, you know, purloined them all, and over the years they got broke, lost, disappeared, you know what it's like. But so that was me. I think pretty much since that day, I've been a carp fisher.
Yeah, just carp?
Yeah. Well, no, not just carp. I will fish for anything, be truthful, but there's only one other type of fishing I do seriously besides carp fishing, and that's blue water fishing. You know, and I like to go somewhere nice and exotic every few years, somewhere like Wilderness, just for marlin and sailfish. I haven't been because of the circumstances with work and now retirement. I haven't been for a few years. Last time I went to Costa Rica, and I fished both sides, fished in the Gulf side and in the Pacific side, fished in the Gulf side for tarpon, and fished in the Pacific half a mile on the surface. But I can persuade the wife to go somewhere next year, probably, having a trip somewhere. Yeah. It's one thing, we're digressing off the car thing, you can waste a hell of a lot of money now on fishing.
Yeah.
By, again, it's very much like carp fishing. You need to do your research and make sure you go to the right places at the right time of the year.
Yeah.
Because everywhere, one of the things I found, very narrow windows. You know, they're in that part of the world for 6 to 8 weeks, they're in that part of the world for 6 weeks, they're in that part of the world for 4. Of course, everybody that is keen enough to know this knows it. So trying to get boats at that time of year can be difficult. So sometimes you have to wait 2 years.
To get your
week or whatever.
Sometime. Not sure I'll ever do it, but certainly on the bucket list, something like that. Just any fishing experience. Still, it's back to the carp fishing, because we don't want to be called the marlin cast and, or the tarpon cast, as fascinated as they are.
Yeah.
Well, till I think the first time I heard of you or read about your stuff, it was right about when you'd been down Longfield and but this is before, not just before internet, before mobile phones even. How did you, being up in Yorkshire,
how did you even hear of the
places of Longfield?
Well, I mean, the Longfield stories, Longfield and Raisby story, I suppose that's the best way to put it. the long field bit came first, and it came even earlier than what most people think. When they moved the fish from Yovney, which is what they called it at the time, there was a big feature in the Angling Times about netting them and moving. And it only gave you little clues as to where they'd gone. Just by some freak of coincidence, I actually got to know where they came from. The reason being is because I got the number for, then it was, I can't remember if it was Leisure Sports by then. It certainly became Leisure Sports, but the guys that moved them was part of the RMC gravel company. Yeah. Obviously, I'm being involved in the mining industry. So I made a couple of phone calls, and we got to find out where they'd been moved to. And it was one of their waters that they controlled. Longfield, though, going back years, was privately owned. I know one or two quite well-known, I would say they're probably octogenarians now, carp pioneers.
Yeah.
Could be wrong, they might not quite be that old. They used to fish it, poach it, and that makes interesting stories. But anyway, they went...
There's a lot of poaching going off in this chat.
Yeah. Well, it used to be a lot in the early days. Because of lack of access to water, simple as that. So I got to know originally about Longfield. I think it was 82. Might have been 83. It's a long time ago. It's before the M25 was built, for a start.
Yeah.
Anyway, so cut a long story short, I found out who it was, got a ticket, drove down, and it were a nightmare, because you have to basically come off it. I think I came off at M1 at Watford and wheedled the way all the way down. Oh, it was ridiculous. Cut a long story short as well, so this probably, from a year's point of view, the fish were dying. A lot died. So I was put off by it. So I never went again to Longfield at that particular point in time. Go forward a few years, I think it'd be 86. Yeah, I think it was 86. A certain gentleman that come from Louth had a 39-pounder out of a lake in that area of the world. And he was doing a slideshow. And I thought to myself, I want to know where that fish come from. And I asked him, and he told me, Raysbury. Right? And I thought, I don't know where Raysbury is. Because obviously, if you've been a Longfield before, you can't miss Raysbury.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I knew where that is. So, and I'd also been a Leisure Sports member, which Leisure Sports had Raysbury 1 and Raysbury 2 on part of their portfolio, because I used to fish Darrenth in the early days. It's another story about when I used to fish Waveney and Darrenth and fish Darrenth in winter. So off I went, went down and had a recce. And when I got to the lake, I realised that how he'd been talking to what I was looking at, this couldn't possibly be the same place. But I decided I'm going to fish there. What coincided with this as well, at the same time, is that the Carp Society magazine produced an article by Pete Springate all about fishing Raysbury. So, I'd seen that, and already decided to fish Raysbury, so I thought, well, I'll just carry on, even though it wasn't this lake that got this fishing in. And I think Pete at the time, that, the reason he'd written that article is he'd watched it, it was his swan song for Raysbury, it was moving on, I think truly believed they caught everything that were, well, they had, they caught at that time, he caught everything that was worth catching out of there. So but it wasn't the water that this big, this near 40 that that was in. I found out where this near 40 were in quite quickly afterwards, because somebody down there honestly told me where it was, and I went and found it. It was Crayfish Pool, as they always called it there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a little gravelly place. It's a blocked off bay of what was or is Kingsmead.
Yeah.
I always say Kingsmore and Kingsmead. But I don't know what happened to that fish, but it certainly wasn't in after the time I found it. It was long ago, because I used to go up there quite regularly when it was warm, and it was never ever fished again. I don't think anybody had actually got control of it. I think it was anybody's, you know what I mean, awkward to get to. So that's how we started fishing Raisebury. And Raisebury was one of the, at the time, thought to be very difficult. My first trip at Raisebury, I caught two.
Wow.
Yeah. John Alec caught three. What unbeknown to us, between us, I think in that first year, we caught a fair proportion of the population in the lake, some of which was fish that became the fish that everybody knows Raisebury for. In fact, we named them, Malin's fish, for instance. They ought to have been called John Alex, because John caught it twice before Malin did. But when Dave caught, we was there when Dave caught it on floaters out at swimming pool, and then we just referred to it as Malin, Dave Malin's fish, as a what they call it. I think I was the first person to catch cluster out of there, and we didn't call it cluster, it was just that fish. But we nicknamed measles.
That one, and lovely gnarly old thing.
It was the last fish I caught out of Raisebury with measles a couple of years later. But how I ended up back at Longfield is that, you're fishing Raisebury, and to be truthful, there was only me, John, Richard. Pete came back a little bit, but not like he fished it in subsequent years, in the 90s, and there was Dave Cunxton, so it was hardly fished. So the way to fish it, and don't forget, we're on a fishing weekends, if you could find fish somewhere, fish on them, you generally could get a bite. The secret was just finding them. Because they weren't disturbed from one week to the next, and it didn't mount to, I bet, between all three of us, but we only did about 40 days fishing in an entire year, and like I say, you should never see anybody. That changed. But I started going back up to Longfield I think the second year that we were on there, just having a walk around, because I knew what it was, and I used to see so many fish, because Longfield fish showed. God, they showed. I mean, you could often sit there and you see one there clown, but I mean, you'd think there were a lot more than actually was. And the other thing, that year there weren't a lot of anglers fishing it, which again painted a different view of how what it was like. So I decided the following year to fish, to concentrate on Longfield, but go just stalking at Raisebury in days, just opportunistic fish Raisebury, but sit and concentrate on Longfield. I left it, sadly, it was probably the busiest year Longfield had ever seen that following year. I mean, it was ridiculous, to be truthful, absolutely ridiculous. I've never seen so many carp anglers. I mean, there were some weekends where there was two rods in every hole, a lake. It's about, it's a puddle, it's a tiny lake. So it fished a bit tough. I think the first year, I think I caught two. The second year, which sadly turned out to be the last year the lake was open. Shan't go into the reasons how it shut, because better leave things, sleeping dogs lie, but let's just say we got what we deserved. That's the best way to say it. Anyway, the last year, I mean, it was a shock to all of us. I mean, I caught three the last year, considering how busy it was. Somebody lived 186 miles away, I think it wouldn't have any bad result here. I don't really limited time, but it was a shock to us all when we got the all got the letters telling us that it would give us about 9 days. I think the letters went out on the 29th of December. I think the lake shut on the 7th of January. And that was it, Longfield gone. And what happened to all the Longfield fish that got took to all?
Yeah.
I mean, it created another piece of angling history. I mean, them fish, poor buggers, and them here, they've been in three different lakes by the time they got to all. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting how they never got to, well, maybe a bit the first year, but they didn't seem to get labelled as easy stockies. They're still the so-called history fish that
they
all put on pedestals now.
Be truthful. I always maintain it. The first big fish, artificial big fish stock water in Britain was Horton. Can't deny it. There were nowhere else at that time. It was in 91.
Was it a former trout fish before?
It was trout fish, yeah. 91, no other lake had been created instantly with. They got 44 and 39 or 38, 2 or 3 35.
Fish like Jack, the parrot,
on the
shoulders.
Yeah, they took what they call it, they took the road leg fish as well.
Was that lumpy or humpy?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, took that as well. So I mean, it's quite funny, but that when you hear people sort of knocking these artificially stocked big fish waters, Horton were one.
And I'd have actually fished any of them.
Yeah.
Almost any.
Yeah. But it wasn't a long period in the angling career. When you look at it now, what am I up to? Is it 40 years I've been carp fishing? That's just a few years.
That's a blip.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was left in limbo a little bit when the Longfield shut. I ain't got any plans.
Yeah.
I went and then, I think in late January, I went down to Yateley and it was a test run and it was a bridge too far. It was 203 or 204 miles from home. Not a good weekend doing 400 mile round trips.
That's a long way, and I can't imagine cars being too reliable back then as they are now.
They weren't. I mean, the traffic weren't as bad, but and the saddest part about it all was not the losing the opportunity to fish and still wanted to catch. I lost contact with mates.
Yeah.
I mean, what I considered my best friend at Longfield was a lad called Mick Daly. And, we just lost contact completely. I mean, he's just one of quite a few. But they're the bits that I really miss. Fishing's bugger all to do with it, But I know Mick went on to Yateley and he did fantastic. I mean, it was like he just racked him up. it was like going to have a quick overnighter and catch baby orange tonight, Then he went and caught, I think he caught them all, but he was one of these quiet lads that didn't say a lot. He kept his locks to himself, unless you knew him quite well.
Yeah, just went about his business catching big fish.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I went by the Raysbury, the 16th of June, because don't forget
we had 16th of June,
and to be say I was doubly kicked in the nuts was when I saw how many anglers were now fishing raised bait. Gone on the day of days of, you know, being able to.
Had Mary gone big at that point?
No. Had she? It was the heat, wasn't it?
Was Olive around then as well?
Well, John had caught Olive that first session we ever did on there. Yeah, that was. I don't know whether that was still in, because the thing he caught it afterwards, Chris Ball, but that was before it got busy.
Yeah,
that was before it got busy. I think Pete had Mary out the year previous at 45, and that's basically why it had gone. I was surprised Pete actually publicised it. I mean, because before Pete caught it, Compo had caught it at least twice, maybe three times, you know, on his way up, and he was the first person to catch it over 40 and never said anything. It was his pair. And God knows how many times Compo caught it, you know, over the years. I certainly caught it 27, and he had it twice when it was 48 and 50, I think, something like that. When you work for a living, you know, it was, I mean, they weren't even bivvying up and night fishing in swimming pool, which actually was out of bounds area, even though we all used to go fishing, you know. It was, and I realised that, you know, the competition and the way that I fish meant that, you know,
you were against it.
Yeah, and I haven't fished in that area since, you know. I left it alone. I did join. Well, it's not really that area. So I did join Welly, you know, more recent times. But you know, when that went up to a grand a year, I decided it wasn't worth it for three trips a year.
Yes, I think it's about £1,800 now.
Yeah, but
with 2050s.
It's worth every penny. It's worth every penny.
I mean, not a single person dropped out.
Which tells you a lot.
Yeah.
Just tells you how, you know, it just tells you why pillock I am for not just keeping my ticket going. I started fishing really more in Lincolnshire. I'm more or less stuck in that South Lincolnshire, you know, Cambridgeshire area ever since, really. It's got that many good fish to be had.
Yeah, you know, I travelled double the distance. There's a lot of water. I started travelling, go down Welstow, which was about 130 odd mile.
Yeah.
Then, you know, from there to St Ives, which is 100 mile. Then round some of the Stamford waters, which is 80 miles.
I actually was a member at Elstow. I remember Elstow too for a couple of years.
Did you ever fish it, or were you just using it as a waiting list for one?
Did I ever go? No, I think I went once, fished Elstow too. I quite liked it, but something else come along. I got membership for Duncan Case.
Oh, Mid North Ants.
Yeah, yeah.
They did the record.
Yeah.
As well as some.
It was the year after. A year after Ronnie Porter and Alex bought it, I got me the ticket for there. So I ended up, you know, fishing there. And that, without a doubt, was. They were fantastic. Because it was a time limit water, and consequently didn't matter if you were a non-working angler or a working angler or whatever, these rules made it fair for everybody, and it was just great. Sadly, that only lasted 18 months. I got a full year, and then from 16th of June to, I think, when he lost control of it, was about November, something like that. But I caught, you know, had some good times and some good fish. I mean, because anybody that remembers, if you go back to that late 70s, early 80s, there was only a handful of waters in the UK that did good fish boom 30s.
Yeah.
You know, you got Duncan Cays, you got Ashley, you got Redmire, you got a few, you know, little secretive ones, you know, and then the Surrey area, you know.
Yeah.
And then you got Waveney Valley. Yeah. You know, Waveney Valley was probably the first open access water that you know, you could catch a 30-pound carp from. The amount of people I know that caught their first 30-pound carp from Waveney must be, you know, for the time, must have been probably, you know, a good percentage of the carp angling population in Britain. Because, like I say, I know, I can think of, you know, quite a number, including myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I mentioned the, you know, like Lincolnshire, you know, Cambridgeshire area.
Yeah.
We've got to talk about a fish I know you've had a couple of times. Probably one, for me, it is the best looking mirror in the country.
Yeah.
Also, it's on the cover of the current Carpology with Lewis Port, if you want to see it.
Yeah.
People out there. And,
yeah, well, I mean, there's some parts of me angling that, you know, I'll always keep to myself. Well, then,
that's fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, now, it's open knowledge, that fish. You know, it's open knowledge. There's some fish I wouldn't want to talk about, the truth is, because they're not. And the reason I say that is that one common denominator I found with all these big fish that's pursued, none of them's alive. You know, which is something, you know, we have to take a serious look at ourselves, you know, when you think that they're all dead. You know, Mary, Black Mirror, Two-Tone, yeah. You know, they're all dead. You know, and is it something that we've done? Have we pursued them to death? Well, luckily, the maxi fish can't ever happen that way. Because it's a small syndicate, and consequently, you know, it can also get away from everybody. That's the other thing you can do. So, you know, that's probably one that will last the test of time. You know, but yeah, I mean, I got to find out about that fish. You know, again, it was another bizarre circumstance. I was fishing a lake. I know that area because I used to live in Stanford.
Yeah.
Only for a short period. And I know all the lakes that's all the way around there through living there. And me and a few mates have been fishing another lake, and it was absolutely red hot. And the mates from Norfolk, where I used to fish the lakes in Norfolk, were absolutely red hot. I said, you fancy going out for something to eat and you know, a cold beer? And it's a long story short. Right, go on then. So we ended up in a pub in Maxi Village. And the only reason I went to that pub is because I knew it that well, because the house bang opposite Maxi Village I nearly bought. But opposite Maxi Pub I nearly bought.
Yeah.
But we had his dinner and everything. And I was stood at bar and I could see that he'd got this framed picture shoved in on a shelf underneath the till, and I could see the tail or whatever this was. And I asked him what it was, and he got it out and he showed me a picture of a 42-pound beautiful linear carp. And I says, why is it up there? And he says, oh, it causes trouble. He says, so I put it away. He says, lad who caught it, he'll be in later. And I says, where is it from? So he told me exactly where it was from, all the rest of it. Well, so you know. I didn't obviously share this information with the rest of the people I was sat with, like you do.
Exactly.
But I went and did a little bit more digging and a little bit more of a recce. And I knew the lake. I knew the lake, which I found it quite hard to believe it had come from that lake, to be honest. Because it was known as being a runs water full of doubles, basically. But then I was probably forgetting that that was 20 years ago. Things change, and this like had changed. You know what I mean, the first person I talked to, become a good friend, him and his wife George, and his lad Carl, and George explained to me that, you know, if you wanted to fish here, you could, but you'd have to get yourself a caravan, join caravan club. This is book yourself a caravan, so. It took me about 3 seconds to decide what I'm going to do next. I went and got myself a caravan, joint caravan club, and I started fishing it from caravan side. You could only fish half of it then. Well, went half of it. It was probably a third of it, if you want to call that. But there were very few people fishing the syndicate side. Very small, very, very, very small syndicate. I think it was only about 7 of them, because they haven't got the whole lake, because the caravanners have gone. And there are quite a few of the caravan fraternity that went there, that catfished. You know, that's what they, you know, they were doing exactly the same as me. I was lucky in so much that none of them wanted to fish the swim that we call secret swim, because you couldn't fish for it at the caravan, which suited me, because I used to plant the caravan near path that you walk down to the swim. I used to fish there, and you know, I did all right from day one. And I also thought all that was in there was this big linear, and by now this big linear, by the way, is now over 50. That's what really,
even bigger linear.
Really got me interested. But my second carp was a double, I expected to be in there. But my next carp was a 33 common, which I didn't, nobody mentioned this. And I proceeded the next, you know, all the fish I was catching were far bigger than I expected to be, you know, big 20s, low 30s, you know, which is, well, this is paradise. You know, sooner or later, that fish is going to come along. I got on really well as well with the two ladies that used to come and collect your money for the caravan, and which turned out to be, I didn't know at the start, turned out to be Tony, who owns the lake's daughters. And there was another guy that was on the syndicate that had gone really well, and I'll always be eternally grateful to him, like Coley Ellis. You know, he put me a bit of a word in, and I got summoned up to the big house, you know, in the spring of the following year. And Tony basically introduced himself to one of the lake, said the girls put a word in for me, and we had put a word in for me, and asked me if I wanted a ticket to fish. That's the lake, you know. So I got my ticket.
You didn't have to think about that.
No. Yeah, I mean, I think the ticket started 16th of June was the last start. It was low that year. The water level was really low, so all the fish was in the main part of the lake. And something that's pretty crucial, I realised, that I didn't at the time. So, I was still fishing that side, and I thought it was about time I started going to have a look over at the side. I started fishing at the side, and again, you know, just carried on catching the same. I mean, and now it seems to have got extremely difficult. But I mean, back then, you know, it weren't unusual to catch six in a night. I think I finished up when I eventually decided that enough's enough. I think I'd had something like 30 fish over £20, and I'd repeated on them over and over again, several 30s, four 30 pound commons, which are all good backup fish. But the first time I caught the bigger, and it was weird, because I'd seen it on the Sunday when I packed up and I'd gone round to the other side, the roadside, into Tony's house, and I just looked at snags and swam into snags again with this common that he was drawing me with, and I saw it and I thought, bloody hell, it's such an immense looking fish. And on my way home, I had this feeling that I was going to have to go back that week. And I think it was Tuesday, or it could have been Wednesday. And I used to always have my fishing, back at Trump. I was on my way to work. I used to have to drive, 60 miles to work from here. And so it's like going down here. And I got to my junction, and it was about 7:30 in the morning. I thought, sod it, I'm going to carry straight on. And I did. For some reason, don't ask me why, I just knew I had to go and fish that day. And so I drove, I carried on. And it's about another, it's a good hour and 20 minutes drive. So every time I got to, like, it was 9 o'clock. And it were good. It were all right conditions, and I went and fished in gate swim. And the gate swim and the reed swim, they're so close together. If you fish one, you know exactly what's in front of the other. But I'd had a quality night, because I used to see this big fish, in two places, and if you scared it from one, it used to appear in other shortly afterwards.
Yeah.
And if you scared it from there, it'd appear in that one. And you realise you were just swimming shortest possible route between two areas. And these thick snags, not a fishing proposition. So I decided to fish on this path, which happened to be coincided with the gate swim. And I caught one straight away. And then, as you do, sat in my chair in a nice warm day, I started to doze, and next thing I know, buzzers are going again, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's when I caught it first time.
It's a nice sociable time to catch a fish.
Yeah, I ended up, the fire were incredible. It is a phenomenal,
yeah.
There were no weed in the lake then, so it just dragged me all over the place. I ended up getting to get in, because it was trying to get into snags, so I just thought, basically jump in and run, just block it off. You don't realise that blocking it off meant I weren't too here at one stage. But I stopped it. I ended up netting it actually in the reed swim next door. I carried on fishing the lake after that. Everybody says to catch the top. I carried on fishing because I wanted to catch that common that used to follow it about. And I still don't believe that fish has ever been caught. They were always on its arse. And I saw it loads of times that year. We're always with it. It was only slightly smaller than that. That's what intrigued me, because even though there's better fish in there now, they weren't the size of, they were low 30s. So I carried on fishing it. And I caught it again at a kingfisher swim on, I think it was August bank holiday. So I caught it, the 19th of July that first season, and I caught it again at August bank holiday. And I thought, there were lots of people on that lake wanting to catch that fish then, like Lee, who I really wanted him to have his turn. So I pulled off, I decided, that was it. The common could wait. And I mean, if that fish ever croaks, I'll go back, because I think that's when we'll catch that common, because I think he's his protector, his big one. I think somehow he stops it getting caught, you know, if it's still alive. Yeah, another little story about that fish.
Yeah.
You got to remember, you move on. I think it was, no, that's right, I'd gone and fished Chad.
Ooh, black guy.
Yeah, I'd gone and fished Chad. And Rick Stewart, he was working for ACF.
Yeah, Advanced Pro Quad, wasn't he?
And I was doing a feature with Rich. And he says, you know, it was a feature on something like, I don't know if it was 20 or 12 of the essential things you'll never get catfishing. Yeah. And I says, well, we'll do that anyway. No, I want to do it on a lake. So I says, well, I'll meet you, Maxi. You know. And so I only went for a day. You know, and again, I think I got there about half an hour before Rich. And then we fished the caravan side. Fished the caravan side. And he said to me, when we'd done all the, I mean, I'd got my rods out, and when we'd done all the, you know, bits and pieces and all the rest of it, he says, it'd be nice if you could catch a fish, you know, just for a few action shots. I said, it would be. And funnily enough, the last thing that we covered, which is something I want the fishing with, is a pair of chest waders. So I've got these chest waders on.
Yeah.
You know, next thing I know, the rod that was in the, was on the, you know, off the point in the end, screamed off. I says, there you are. I said, just hope it's run the right way. So it runs down, picks the rod up. I says, it's run the right way. Nearly burnt my finger on the spool. And I realised, what the hell's this? So maximum side strain on it, and it's in the shallows the back there. This fish rolls over, and I saw his tail. I thought, I can't believe this. You know, it's a long story short, I caught it for cameras.
To order.
I think, I mean, that was smallest I caught it to as well. I think it was 51-12. Yeah, I did 53-12, 52-12, 51-12. But I won't let Rich Stewart use it. So I actually went for one day in that 1 year and caught it again, which I felt, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't a nice feeling, because I was thinking, I didn't tell. In fact, I didn't tell anybody for a while, because, you know, that was on the scene, because I thought they'd kill me. You know, and I had to own up to it. You know, and it's not nice to, you said to Lee, who's been chasing it all, you know, all the time, and I caught it on a day session, and I worked with it, you know.
We were there for a feature, just chucking some rugs out.
So, yeah, it just happened to me.
I mean, it's kind of taken away their prize, but.
Yeah, and I understand that.
Yeah,
I understand it. But
there's that, you know, that thing though, you can't help which fish picks your bait when it's down there.
You can't.
Unless you're stalking.
You can't. You can't. And I mean, if you're fishing a lot, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, now that lake has got more than just that. So, I mean, I don't blame anybody that fishes there to catch that, to carry on, because it's got enough to keep, in fact, to the point where there's a few I wouldn't mind, you know, but I think, you know, I'll be honest with you, if I didn't go back, I think lightning striking four times, I don't think it's going to happen. So, yeah, I'm probably safe there.
Yeah, but you didn't think a third time had come.
No, I didn't. It's just the way it is. I mean, it's not something that I would want to do again. You know, basically, when there's lots of other places to fish. Like I said, there's lots of other places to fish. You know, since I've retired, I sort of sit and I still haven't got a game plan as to what I'm going to do in future. I don't know. Everybody says that, you know, they all look forward to retiring and all the rest of it. Wish I could do that there. Yeah. When you've worked, because I technically was, I had a full time job for 39 years, it brought structure to my life.
Yeah.
It was also, you know, I'd done lots of different jobs in that 39 years, all related to one, the industry, mining industry.
Yeah.
You know, I'd had highs, lows, and all the rest of it, but you know, when you work at a certain level, it's very hard to just switch off, and that's what happened to me. You know, I had a job on the 19th of December in the morning. By 5 o'clock that day, I packed the briefcase up, shook my laptop bag up, and came home. That was it. You know, and we'd been working at a million miles an hour right up to that point, and it was over. But it took the structure out of my life, so consequently, I still don't know what the hell I'm doing. I know it's May now, but, you know, I've hardly been fishing. In fact, you know, it's a trip abroad, a few stalking sessions, you know. I mean, the weather's been a bit crap, but you know, it does take some adjusting. I think when it does, you know, I probably will. I'll get on with it.
It's a few years off for me, but I can imagine I've had a lot of people who when I was on the taxis, I picked up a bunch of old teachers who used to teach me, and it was pretty much the same. One had just retired, they'd been out and, you know, were celebrating another one's retirement, and they're saying exactly the same thing. They were just lost, you know, structure's gone, and he says he's absolutely sick of gardening by that point.
Yeah.
But I suppose something like this, your own life.
For the benefit of the listeners, we're actually sat outside of my lake.
Yeah, you can probably hear the drone of the main road in the background. But, what a beautiful lake it is, Dave, and it's only going to get better as it matures. All the tree planting you've done, how many was there, you say?
We've planted 3,500. We've quite a lot more to do. I have my members to thank, for this. I mean, one of them acquired them all through a chance meeting with another, John won't mind me saying this. This is John Murcott, who supplies us with all the trees. He's a nutcase. He's a proper tree hugger. He loves trees. That's all he wants to do in his life.
Want to be a tree.
And he supplies them as free. We provide the labour, to plant them. He supplies us the trees, and he'll be growing trees for us now, and his nursery ready for this year.
Yeah,
it's a project called Green Fire Project. It's a small business that is attached to his main business, putting something back in, like the carbon offset type thing. But yeah, it's kept me busy for the last 4 years. We were very busy. I mean, I have to thank my wife, because my wife actually pushed me into eventually making a decision to buy it. You know, she says, you're never going to get this opportunity to buy something as big as this, so close to home. I'm never going to go to North Yorkshire. It takes a lot of believing when you. And I had all these water quality surveys done. Its age, because it's not an old lake, everything about it was perfect. You couldn't have bought something at a better time. It's been here 10 years now. It's probably getting up to its most fertile. It's fed by the Harrogate Spa Aquifer, so the water quality is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I was saying to you earlier, you can see down, it's 26 foot of water. It's quite, for the benefit of this, it's quite deep in places.
and the fish seemed to do really well. I mean, it originally was a fly fishery for our boy, and I've got some of them still left in here. Some of the trout are still left in, and they've naturally grown from, because they've been stocked to a bit common proof, you know, 2-3 pound. And we've had about 13-14 pound, you know. I mean, and they're not just surviving, they're thriving. And the carp again, you know, the carp, you know, about every well, I've stocked with fish from 5 different sources, and every one is done well, you know. And actually, they almost change appearance. That's the thing that's so unbelievable. I'll give you an example. I put 5, would say they look almost scrawny, that's the best word to put.
Yeah,
scrawny. But I knew the pedigree of the fish, you know, quite well. You know, they got the right pedigree, but it's just where they'd been before just didn't suit them. They're not very young, and they're about 8 pound. But you see how they've changed, you know. There's, you know, they'll have been in 3 years ago. Probably 3 years ago, this February was gone. And like I said, they were between 6 to 8 pound. Yeah, anyway, you know, they're mid-20s already. But more to the point, they look absolutely stunning. You know, they've got proper proportions, they're thickened out right there, they put meat on it right there. You know, it's all a learning, you know, still a big learning session, is this, you know, fishery owner, you know, stroke, you know, monitoring growth. And I've seen already what really makes differences.
Yeah.
And you won't believe how much we affect their behaviour. I mean, we don't, you know, we all know that we affect their behaviour to a degree, but I don't think you realise how much you do really affect. And they, without a doubt, instinctively know when they're being fished for. The first year that these were stocked, I managed to keep it not a single line in the water for about 18 months. And these fish would follow you around. They'd come to you if you were messing around in hedge.
Just curiosity.
No, I can be honest with you, with the trout, I was trying to feed them, because the trout just did everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, the curiosity they came to, you know. And I'll be honest with you, when I opened it the first time fishing, I thought, oh, these poor swines are going to look absolutely battered. I really did. Because, you know, they were almost like garden poultry tame. You know, you banged on, bang, they came to you. So it was them first legs and lines started going water. Not at all how I thought. Like even now, 3 years down the line, there's still fish that I know swimming around here has not been caught. There's also fish that got caught first year, haven't been caught since. You know, and they're still swimming around. You know, and like I said, some of the lads that fish here, you know, that's no disrespect to them, they've struggled to catch a fish. You know, others don't. You know, but you know, it's not. It's really, really interesting. Because I mean, it's interesting because I get to know more or less exactly what everybody catches and when, and because I can come those days how, because I'm an angler. I can't really hide anything from that, can you? You know, I see all that. You start to see fishing and you can play to your fishing in a new light. But I didn't realise how much we affected them. Another example of that, when I have close season here, and it varies, because I try and close it, you know, when they start to spawn, and then leave it close to 6 weeks after that. The first week it's closed,
it's like northern, it's just like it normally is.
Yeah.
You know, you might catch the odd little fishing edge somewhere and all the rest of it. The second week, totally different from that. From that point onwards, if the sun shines and the weather's right, them fish will swim round in edge in front of swims that you know, places as though they're not caring with. I mean, my wife loves it. It's like an aquarium. You know, they just know that there's no lines in water, there's nobody fishing for them anymore, and you know, it is quite bizarre. It's changed the way I certainly think about fishing pressure waters. And I mean this is pressure water, don't get me wrong, but the fact is if these fish behave like this, you know, in a completely unpressured situation, what must it be like when you're in a 4-acre lake with 10 angles somewhere, week in, week out, when do you catch out?
Yeah, it does. We had the chat earlier on about we would show me how well spaced out your swims are. Each swim's got tons of room, and imagine the polar opposite where I've been down to Swan Lake at Bluebell, and that Elstow style of three rods on a spot is your only option, because you've got that strip in front of you, and that is it. But the fish in there, like Dave and Zedfish, they're not out every week. They still get away with you, and they're bloody big fish, they still eat.
It's a good job they are, because I don't think they'd survive otherwise.
Yeah.
They'd probably be stressed to hell. It does make you think. There's a lot to be learned from them waters. I take everything. You don't dismiss anything, because the last really pressured water I fished was Sally Walsh's dam.
Yeah, well, when Sally the Common was around.
Yeah, that's probably, I've got to say, I mean, Sunday night, you could have two swim choices on a Sunday night. And we had at least, besides the bailiff and two or three others that fished on there, four or five days a week, week in, week out. It was pressured. And I didn't like it. The truth was, I didn't like it at all. But once you put your toe in water, you can see it all the way through. And I've got to say, when I did eventually catch it, and I drove home, I thought, thank God I ain't going to go back to that. I did think that.
I've had a couple of captures at myself. It's over, thank God.
But what I learned while I was there has helped me a hell of a lot. In my future fishing, and that's what you've got to take from those situations.
Definitely.
You might not like it, but if you can catch under those circumstances, and you can catch regular, you can usually find out when you go somewhere where you can breathe again. Fishing becomes very easy.
Banking on.
That's
what I was thinking of this year. The plans have changed now, obviously, with the ticket coming up, but I'm thinking, right, I'm going to go Swan, I'm going to put up with it. If it's busy, I'm just going to go and just
smile fish. And wave.
Just smile and wave, and try not to cast 3 ounce lens at too many bait boats. Even then, I got a message saying, do you want this ticket? And I thought, oh yes, I've been saved from Swan.
The ticket I was hoping for this year has not come up, but I'll wait. I don't know where me year's gonna go. I still remember the Bundys. I've got to say, I was a bit disappointed to find out the day one of the fish I wanted to, that I've always wanted to catch out of Bundys, there's no more. Apparently it's not been no more for quite some time, and that's because last 4 years I've been engrossed in this. So, you know, a lot of things are just on the top of my head. Apart from a few foreign trips, you know, my English fishing's took a bit of a back seat. But, you know, I want to make that good again there, you know. And I don't like, to be honest with you, I know we're here fishing today. I don't particularly like fishing here, you know, because, you know, it's not why I did it.
I
did it for others. I mean,
I've heard Kev Nash say exactly the same thing about his church.
Yeah. Like, I did it for others, not for me. You know. Yeah. And there's nothing, as I said, there's nothing like watching somebody, you know, catch something that, you know, that makes their day. You know. Yeah. And I'm hoping a few years down the line, you know, we're up in North Yorkshire, lots of these members here are never going to go far for the fishing. They're going to catch fish that they can never catch anywhere else, you know. And they all have that big smiley face.
Yeah.
Isn't it, you know? There's nothing better.
Yeah, like earlier on, I forgot his name.
Dave Ashley.
Yeah, Dave Ashley had, was it 28 pounds? Lovely clean mirror.
Yeah.
Got a big smile on his face. Yeah. I'd love the moon just to see a fish.
Yeah.
You know, round a rod in that I'd just put out after paddling up the matches.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And anyway, I get a lot out of that. I mean, it's, a lot of carp anglers can be quite selfish. I've never considered myself a selfish angler. I take a lot from, like I said, things like that. And some of the other lads that fish here, you know, some of the fish they've had so far, you know, and they're so happy to be able to. And this is sound ridiculous, especially to somebody that lives in the south. They've actually got somewhere where they can come and legally night fish. Because up here, you know, go back a few years, you couldn't night fish anywhere. All clubs used to ban it. So, I mean, you know, which is what we were talking about earlier. Yeah. I mean, it took. I'm heavily involved with Bradford. Bradford number one angling club, and they even now only have very fixed few venues that they allow now for sure. Yeah. So you know it's a strange one.
Well, the thing in Doncaster is, well, last year, you know, there's two club waters, council owned and leased, and the council for whatever reason decided just to stop night fishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know exactly. I think they've got it back on at least one, maybe both now.
Yeah,
but it was just some, I don't know, some pencil pusher in the council thought, oh, you shouldn't be fishing at night, let's ban it.
Yeah, well.
Not realising that one of the part legs is, you know, the anglers are kind of like, you know, a bit of a guardian of the place now.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a mentality that we don't understand, but I'm sure that. Sure, they've got, you know, somewhere in their petty little brains that they will have got a reason. And that's been it's been a problem with Northern England, I think, since after I started catfishing. They seem to be very anti. It used to be in early years, very anti. And in reality, it's now mainstream.
Yeah, catfishing has gone totally mainstream now.
It has.
There's even a podcast.
I mean, a lot of people have a bit of a, you know, mixed feelings about, you know, how it's changed, but, you know, things move on.
Yeah.
That's one thing I can say about my angle and about the attitude to it. It's moved. You know, I'm a realist rather than in some cases some people who are fantasists. You know, and I mean, I didn't understand. I mean, early on this year, I'll give you an example. I didn't understand something I'd seen It was one of the one of the corner. I don't know the car, but it's got Dean Macy and
on Ali telly Hamidi
on the telly.
Big Fish Off.
Yeah, Big Fish. I didn't get it on the telly. I didn't get it at all. And wrongly, I normally don't have any opinion about anything, but there was something on Facebook, and I put my comments where I thought. But then, when I went to Northern Carp Show, and saw that audience and how they related to them too, and I watched the kids, I got it. Yeah. You know, they're selling fishing to people that, you know, in today, not in my, how it was sold to me was Jack Hargreaves and Jack Hilton and you know, that type of approach. That, you know, and I got it, you know. There was a young lad coming, sat with me, waiting for the previous speaker to finish because he was that close to the stage because he wanted to sit right up front when they come on.
Yeah.
And he was like almost dragging his dad along, you know, like, and I just thought, he was about 9 years old. And I thought, I got it.
Yeah.
I eventually got it. I thought,
I've seen exactly the same working in the tackle shop, you know, kids have seen it on telly, and, you know, in programs like Big Fish Off, it's not aimed at the sort of people like us who've been carping and, you know, forever, but just the general public audience to show fishing, then the fun it can be.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well, I tell you the thing that if I hadn't had fishing in my life, I don't know how I'd have turned out. I certainly wouldn't have turned out the way I did because, you know, coming from South Yorkshire, you know, it's not the gentlest of counties, let's put it that way.
That is true.
And me, you know, I look at my older brother, who sadly is no longer with us. I mean, he died two years ago. And you know, some of the things that he got into, I could see myself going that way as well. But I was on the fishing, and that's the way I look at it. Kids today can get into that, you know, into fishing, and if it takes the likes of Dean Macy, Ali Mermini on the telly to do it the way they've done it, they've done a good job.
Yeah, I think they've done a cracking job, like a modern day Crabtree sort of thing.
Yeah, they've done a good job. And I say so. I mean, I say I'm a bit more of a, you know, and I mean, it's funny, maybe as you get older, you're a bit thick, and it might have been absolutely obvious that that's what they were doing, but when I first saw it, it wasn't. And I like to think that I can move with the times. I still haven't got to get to the point where I can see myself using a bait boat. I ain't got that modern.
No, I nearly crossed. If I'd carried on fishing Swarm, I think I would have done it basically. So I'm just, they're a big leveller.
Mm.
You know, like it or not. I'd have probably bought one just so I can use a bait boat better than everyone else uses theirs.
Yeah.
Well, that was my thinking anyway.
But, I mean, yeah, I've never fished a lake so far that's allowed them. I fished lakes that used to allow them. Kingfisher in Norfolk did.
Yeah.
And they had to ban them because people were misusing them. And that's the... So that's the... I suppose everywhere I've been where they've used them and banned them, you get bad, you know, negative press about them, I suppose. That's the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you can't blame the actual tool.
No, it's just
the tool way people behind the controls them. That you have to you have to blame. You know, and if they are used sensibly, you know, and like I say, if you're on a lake where everybody's using them, you're pretty much at a major disadvantage you don't use in reserve. And, I've no doubt at some point in the future I'll be faced with that dilemma, and I either got to walk away from that water and say I don't want to fish it, or I've got to, you know, get myself a bait. But I think anybody that, you know, that relies on them too heavily, though, will come a cropper. You know, because, you know, we should all be able to handle our tools, you know, correctly. We should be able to cast properly. We should be able to, you know, tie a rig up that don't tangle. You know, we should be able to do it. You know, but I pride myself on it. I don't use rig tubing or lead core or anything like that. I don't use anything, because my eyesight, luckily, still. At distance, no matter what distance is good enough to tell me whether my rig's tangled or not. And and I couldn't explain, but the technique that I cast and how I feather it down or rest of it, pretty much, very rarely do I wind a rig in this tangled. You know, very rarely. I usually know the tangled when I've cast in, and so I wind them in straight away. You know, it's something that. I know some people have some right nightmares. You know, it's almost their, like, what's the word? Nemesis. You know, the fact that they're all, you know, if nothing's happened during night, they could be all tangled. You know,
that doubt sets in.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I can't remember the last time I wound in a tangled up rig.
Mm.
And even one a season, I know that would bug me.
Mm.
It's one too many.
Yeah, like I said, and you're trying to explain to somebody how do you manage it. It's like trying to explain to somebody how to cast. I know these guys at the casting situation, I think I'll be the worst subject on the planet, because, you know, I don't know how you explain. Because, you know, it's because I'm a scientist. And I know exactly how to, you know, if you want to make something go further than it's ever gone before, you've got to reduce the friction, maximise acceleration. Simple as that.
Yeah.
It's a mathematical fact.
Yeah.
I suppose how you do
when you
that.
Say it like that.
Eh?
Sounds so simple when you put it like that.
Oh, you've got to get the perfect ballistic curve as well. That's the other thing. It's a science, and it's what goes back to the old, field guns. But you get the, and I know, understand that, you know, some people are always going to be able to do that better than others, and that's. And how you teach them to do it any better than what they can already do it, I don't know. But I'm not a criticism on anybody that does casting tuition, because I know lots of people that's done it and turned around to me and said, you ought to go and have it done. You ought to go and have, some of the better lads. I don't remember all the names, but you know, I mean, it's because they've all improved everybody. But I just don't think they're better managed with me.
Yeah. I've watched likes of Terry Edmonds cast, because he's not a monstrous fella or anything.
Saw that speed. But,
my God! Mm. It was on Cromwell at a roadshow a few years back, and he had one of these alien spot things that he's got. And I've never seen one fly as far.
Mm.
You know, I like to think I can chuck a lead a bit myself, but. You know, when you watch something like that, you think, oh, I think I need a lesson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it, you can't get away from the fact technique creates it.
Yeah.
But it is all about speed. You know, the faster you can accelerate that lead from it being static to you releasing it, if you've got the least amount of friction from that point onwards and you release it at the perfect ballistic angle, it'll go a long way.
Yeah.
You know, it's as simple as that. You know, you can't get away from the fact that it's mathematics. And like I say, it's how these people, I tell you something, you know, when you were saying he's got a big block,
Yeah.
Some of the fastest people on the planet tend to be small, wiry,
dark people. Boxers and martial artists, 100%.
Got it in one. Fast as hell.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong.
Nicholas fast as hell, did you see Khan last night?
No, didn't.
Oh, you don't want me to spoil it for you?
No.
Alright.
No. I'm trying to think what the hell I watched Shakespeare last night, I'll tell you.
Shakespeare?
Yeah, I watched. There's a series, a four-parter, and it's The War of the Roses, which is a part of history I like.
Yeah.
And it's Henry the Fifth or Sixth. Both of them are in it at some stage. I think, well, yeah. Yeah, it's Henry the Fifth that dies, and it's Henry the Sixth that we're now on to. Who marries Margaret of. I can't pronounce French very well. It all ends up at the battle just down the road here, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, back of town.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when they changed from. Because Henry the Fifth was. And Henry the Sixth, the Lancastrians. And Duke of York's already in it. And they end up having a big battle here at town, and he takes the throne. Offer Henry the Sixth, who was known as the Mad King. And that's real history.
Mm. I'm saying, when you say Mad King, I just think of Game of Thrones.
Which is a different sort of history. Didn't Jamie Lannister stab him in the back?
Kingslayer.
So you're a Game of Thrones follower?
Oh, I am. Game of Thrones and Walking Dead and carp fishing, that is my life. With a bit of metal music thrown in.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I watched. That's one of the things I've done since I retired. I watched all the current series of Game of Thrones, right way up to now. And I've now, obviously, I'm season six, is it?
Yeah, six has just started, like two
season
episodes.
Six, episode three tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, funny enough, you say it's amazing how many people watch Game of Thrones and know the story. Because a few weeks ago, when it was snowing, when I'm not carp fishing at the moment, I go and walk, climb mountains. And if I'm a bad day, I go and climb a mountain. You can do it quite easily living up here. Even if you're only 2 minutes from the Lake District, you know, maybe 2 minutes, hour and 15 minutes from the Lake District. Yeah. An hour from any of the peaks in North Yorkshire. Well, we went and did the North. I went and did it with a couple of colleagues from work. Went and did the Northfield Horseshoe, which is topside around the side. And it was a bit. It was lovely at the bottom, at the top, blizzard. And as we walked round the top, you basically couldn't walk straight because of the wind. And I had put my hat on. Where I got it through the snow line, and after that, I ended up with all my hair frozen down the side. We drop down, and it's a big horseshoe. You drop down, goes up to about, I think it's 750 metres. As we're dropping down, they're going up the other side. And as we get out the snow line, I'm going up to say, what's it, everybody said to you, what's it like? Top, you can see at the top.
Yeah.
I says, have you got your dragon glass and your Valyrian sword? Because there's white walkers up there, and everybody knew exactly what we were talking about, all laughing. That's the other thing about retiring, you do get to, because I used to go walking quite a bit when I was younger. I had very little time to do it. It's hard to be work, carp fishing, or domestic duties. And my wife's really envious because that was her hobby. Her hobby's walking.
Yeah.
Because I go walking on the Tuesdays when she's working somewhere, or on the Thursdays. And a lot of my non-carp fishing friends were all into walking. So I did the three peaks. Not last week before, on a Tuesday. We just went up, we just did him for the day. We did in good time as well. And yeah, I come, when you get, come home, it's like, yeah, it's like, it's much rather be doing that than doing what she's doing. And I'm just doing it to fill time.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, that geocaching my wife does, you know, that's got her out doing, you know, lots of long walks, because a lot of these, they're laying out in like long trails, and she's got a friend who's Annette. I think she's I hope I don't offend her by saying, I think she's in the late 40s or 50s. I'm sorry, Annette, if you're totally wrong, but you know, she's doing miles, and if she didn't get a mechanic, I'd have been thinking out of the garage a couple of times to go and whatever finding these things. I find out about it. It's a picture on Facebook. You're doing a canal tunnel. I find out.
That's something that we've done a lot in the future. Because it's I was the first Yorkshire persons to ever fish Raven Valley, because Norman Allen told them, you know, at the time. I doubt I was certainly the first Yorkshire angler to ever be a member of Darren. I went to Cassie, you know, in them really, really early days, you know.
Yeah.
Virtually when Regent's coaches were still doing the, you know, when they were doing the trips, I mean, very early days. So I've always been a bit of a pioneer, but there's nothing left to pioneer in this country. That's not true. There is still some places, you know, that we haven't fully investigated.
You've got to think, with all the floods we've had around Yorkshire, it's got to have shuffled the pack a bit with the lakes that have been flooded.
Yeah, I mean, but most of them, you know, there's a lot of anglers that, you know, like me and you, visit every single blue blob on the map. Whether they've got access to it or not, they do. You know, I've got lots of mates that that's what they do. But there is a massive canal and river system, especially in Yorkshire, that's not seen hardly any of them. There's a lot of it, it's only accessible by boat. And if you look over there, there's a 4-meter long boat. You won't pass it today. That's going to be one of my one of the things I do in future. I'm near. I'm not going to say which river it is I'm going on, because I don't want to blow that one. But all I'll say is that I've already seen a picture of a £39 from the river, and he showed it me in secret, this lad that caught it, and I says, "That's so and so pub in the background." And all I could see was a corner of the wall.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and says, "How do you know that?" I says, "I do." I says, "Because it's the only pub I know that's rendered like that." And he says, "I can't believe it." Yeah, and he decided to tell me everything. Yeah. Yeah, and of course the other thing is all the floods in Yorkshire. There'll be a lot of carpet in the river anyway.
There will be now.
Yeah,
I'd say shuffle the pack.
Well, I mean, it's in the River Ouse that I'm thinking about fishing. But you know, some years ago, the firemen they were in local York paper after one of the floods in York. It weren't this last one. It was 2 or 3 years ago, they found a carp in a cellar. They were pumping out a cellar, you know, that would be flooded by a river, and flapping about in the cellar was a carp. And it shows you these firemen, the picture of these firemen holding it, and it went a 6-pounder. You know, it was a good sized fish, but they took it back and it goes loose. You know, I mean, if you've ever gone to Central York, where the Foss and Ouse meet, you have to see carp anglers fishing there. They actually fish there regularly. You know, there's quite a few in it proves to be truthful, but it's, that's not the ooze I'm thinking of fishing.
Yeah, I know you've got the, well, I'll just call it a lazy river not far from Doncaster that's, we had bad floods in there. I think it was a few years back when there was a couple of commercial fisheries along the banks of it got pretty well flooded, and there was full of small carp. Now the river's full of carp and they're growing nicely.
Yeah, and the a lot of the rivers, especially up in Yorkshire, have been decimated by otters. But there's a certain type of river the otters actually can't feed in. And it weren't until I actually listened to a woman telling me about how these otters got out of this canal that I realised that they couldn't possibly feed in it. And they climbed one of the ladders near the lock gates, because you know all canals are all piled.
Yeah.
With like a concrete overlay. They can't get out. Once they're in them, they can't get out. You can't jump up over. So you get them big canals that you find more over in East Yorkshire. They've got miles and miles and miles of it's really boring, but piled canal.
Yeah.
Can't get out. So you can't feed them.
That's interesting. A lot around Doncaster, we've got the old South Yorkshire Navigation, which turns into the Stafford-Keebian New Junction.
Yeah, they can't get out.
A lot of that's all that.
Yeah. It's not until I looked at it, after this woman, it was in Selby, told Roger. And she says, here they climb up that ladder. Just, you know, bang opposite the boat. And I thought, why are they climbing up the ladder? And then you realise, they can't get out. They can't get out any other way. Once they're in that canal section, they've got to swim out the canal section to find a bank to climb out of, because it's literally 2 foot of steel that they can't climb up. Yeah, and to get purchase, even if they could get up at top, you can't get it. They're not built like that. Yeah. So I realised some of the canals are actually far better protected than what you think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Not something I'd ever thought of that, to be honest.
Well, I never thought about it until you wouldn't have done. I wouldn't have done if it wasn't for the fact that it becomes obvious when you think about it. But you wouldn't have thought it was until that statement. Bizarre. I mean, it shows you how clever they are with the look of this stretch of canal, Selby Canal, they have to swim a long way to get to this point. And it actually takes them virtually to town. Why they're going into town is beyond me. But we know that they've raided garden ponds in that council estate that's on that side. Without a doubt. Yeah, so that's where they're going. It's another story.
Absolutely. And, just looking now, I've been going for quite a while. Time has really flown.
Yeah,
as it does. And I think talking about your future plans for the river is a good point to end. And thanks, Dave Moore, for chatting to us.
Been a pleasure.
Big thanks to Dave Moore, quality angler and all-round nice fella. Should we do a listener's question?
Ask us a question.
Yeah, so I've got one from Michael Goodyear. I've heard you talk about line bites in the past. Could you just explain a little more about them? Is it your bait being picked up or fish moving between your tips and rig? Many thanks.
As a line bite, I mean, when your bobbin moves and when you get a beep, like, there is a number of things it could be. It could be a line bite, and a line bite is exactly as you just described. It's something bumping the line between the tip of the rod and the rig. So it could be a number of other things. It could be you can get bat bites, you know, when it's going dark and you get those blip, blip, and you're not sure what it was, come flying out the bivvy, like you get you know, some lakes you get bats like swooping down on the flies and stuff if you got your rod tips up. Bat bites are fairly common. We used to get them on St. Ives all the time, as well as various other lakes. It could be a fish bite that's you've been done. When that bobbin beeps, it could be a number of things. It could be the wind, but line bites are just one of those things. And it's kind of, when we were talking about indication and bobbins the other week, this is why, you know, with the springers and stuff, I was saying, like, springers will tell you when you've got a fish on, but they don't tell you about everything else in between, because they're keeping the line so tight, and they're actively keeping, stretching the line, and they're putting resistance on it. So a lot of these other things that sometimes are useful, sometimes are not, you know. I mean, if I'm getting bat bites, you know, on dark or whatever, I like to know that they're bats, because every time your bobbin moves and you jump out your bivvy or whatever, and I need to know that it's not a fish, that it's a bat. And sometimes it's pike in the margins, which is technically a line bite, but the way I set my bobbins, I kind of know the difference just by years of experience. You know, when you get the really fast liners, say you're fishing 80 yards out and you get like a really, really sharp sudden, like really fast, I mean, that's something in the edge, that's something close in, because if you get a line bite of a fish bumping your line 60 yards out and you're fishing 80 yards out, so two-thirds of the way, there's no way that's going fast. There's no way that's going to be a sharp sudden movement on your bobbin. It's going to have been something pretty close in. So that could have been, like I say, a bird or a bat hitting your line. Or quite often it's a pike in the edge, you know, and certain times of year, especially this time of year now, you see the pike sort of striking the fry in the edge and stuff. And, you know, it's very common on certain lakes, isn't it? And every now and again you'll hear a big splash, which is unmistakably a pike, you know, like striking. Just this is what I said when we had that lengthy bobbin chat on the previous show, is I like to know exactly what's going on and what's caused it. Now, the one when you're fishing, you know, more than 30, 40 yards out, and you get those just like single beeps or a double beep, that's just not kind of a natural beep. And bobbins, buzzers are getting good now. Like, I know the Fox ones have some sort of memory thing in it where it'll actually filter out like repetitive beeps, you know, so stuff like you know, the waves lapping or whatever. Might need to speak to Scott Day about this, but I'm sure somebody told me that they've actually got some sort of little computer thing in it that you know, works out what's kind of just in a repetitive annoying beep. Remember when you used to set your bobbins? I mean, you used MXs for years, just like me, Mark. And if you picture how the old Optonics used to work, they used to work with the vane that broke a light. So if you set your bobbin and it just happened to be right on the cusp of breaking the line or whatever, you could actually get false beeps constantly, because it's just kind of like the very tiniest movement, even like half a mil, was just setting it off. You'd sometime have to like readjust your bobbin. Now newer buzzers, they don't have that problem, because of various, you know, various ways that companies have come up with stopping false bleeps. Nash do it with the speed sensor. So like the R3s and stuff have got a speed sensor on them, so you can set them down and a sudden movement will always beep like instantly, whereas you can still run them on minimum sensitivity but have maximum indication. I'm sure I've heard that the Fox ones do it by some sort of computer that memorizes like those constant annoying beeps and filters them out, because the Fox ones don't seem to give you many the top of the range Fox ones don't seem to give you many false beeps either. But I like to know with my bobbin. So as we spoke about with like, you know, this craze of fishing really short chains and the bobbin right up against the buzzer, you haven't got much free space for, you know, telling different things apart. As I explained previously, like my preferred bobbin setup is with a reasonable amount of weight on the bobbin, unless I'm fishing close in, but a reasonable amount of weight on the bobbin and a decent drop. So you can tell, and I know the difference between, you know, a pike catching my line in the edge, a really fast movement, or a line bite. Now, a typical line bite, the way, if you imagine let's say for argument's sake, you're fishing a 4 ounce lead 50 yards out into the lake, and there's not too much obstruction between you and your rod tip and your rig. So, there's not like your line's not snaking through loads of Canadian. Let's see, maybe there's some bottom weed or whatever, but that doesn't really matter because there's a fairly clear run from your line to the rig. So if a fish, even like halfway between you and the rig, bumps into your line, it catches round a peck, a dorsal or whatever, and you know it gives you indication, your bobbin's going to rise, but it will always settle in exactly the same spot that it started in. That's how you know you've just had a line bite and nothing else, because if something moves the lead, it's not going to, your bobbin's not going to go in exactly the same spot. So you know when you're on fish and like, and you're getting loads of liners, quite often you get those, you know, all the way up to the top, it hangs there, which is when the line pings off the fin or whatever the carp's caught, and then the bobbin, sometimes you think it's a bite, don't you, and you're like right up on your rods, and you know you're there waiting for it to start clicking off the clutch, and then it just goes did and drops all the way back down to exactly where you started. That's a line bite, you know it's a line bite. Now the picture gets muddier when you've got obstructions between you. So let's say you are going over a weed bed that's like midwater, and it comes up to, I don't know, 3 foot below the surface. Your line's running over it, you've got a semi-tight line, but unless you've got a super heavy bobbin, your bobbin's probably not going to go back down to the exact spot that it was on. So it appears, you know, sometimes you can think, again, it's experience that tells you the difference. If I know that that's a likely occurrence, and I know there's fish in my swim, and I know I'm getting liners, and I get that nice and slow steady where the bobbin goes up to the top, but instead of dropping back down, let's say it goes 5 beeps up, but it only goes 3 beeps back down, I still know that's a liner, because I know, you know, that there is weed between me and the spot, and I know it went up slow and steady. But usually liners are slow and steady unless you're like fishing right in the edge, or you're only fishing 2 rod lengths out or something, then you're going to get the more sharper sudden ones. But I still think they go fairly smooth, line bites. The ones we never know quite what they are is not a single beep, but like a double beep or 2 or 3 bleeps, and the bobbin like shakes or does something. I never know if that's a fish that's just done it, if it's picked up your rig, shook its head, and the hook's popped out. They're the ones that I'm sat there going, have I just been done?
And I had one of them possibly, last night.
Did you?
I'll tell you about this, because it was 100% getting done. I've got those like, well, 3 fast bleeps, because usually on that big pit there's no doubt in a take, it's a one knower. Oh, they just try to pull the rod in if you're fishing tight. And I guess there's, you know, the few bleeps. And then, you know, what, quite weighty bobbins on, it dropped all the way back slowly. I wound, yeah, in it, it shook the lead off.
Wow. Wow, so that hadn't dropped all the way back. What had happened there is the lead had come off on the tape when it shook its head, and because there was no resistance of the lead, the weight of the bobbins pulled the line down. That's how it's dropped, yeah, back down, isn't it? Because it's a slack line, because there's no lead stopping it. Quite often, I mean, you know, this is why, you know, I keep going on about this, but it, you know, I've had 30 odd years of carp fishing experience with various indicator setups, you know, from butt indicators in the old days, from the Fox swingers to, you know, I've tried everything. I've come up with something, you know, through trial and error that I think tells me I know what's going on from the way I use my bobbin. And you know, it's quite simple, it's just having some weight on the bobbin and having a drop on kind of a semi-tight line, not bowstring tight unless I'm fishing a long way out. But I know all the different things, you know, because you get used to it. So I can tell, you know, from my bobbin, I can tell you if a bird's picked it up, because birds, they tend to, if you notice, if something just picks your lead up, like lifts it up and drops it, the bobbin always finishes slacker than it was before, because you've cast out, you've sunk your lead on a tight line, felt for the drop, felt the bump, then you've took up the slack, sunk your line or whatever you do, and then set your bobbin. So you've got kind of as accurate a setup as you possibly can. You know, you felt the rig out nice, it's hit the clip nice, it's dropped nice, you've left it, picked up the slack, done it. Soon as something alters that, i.e. you know, a coot picks the lead up or something and drops it, all of a sudden that is now not the same as it was before. So even if it picks it up 4 inches and drops it in the same place, you always end up with some slack line. Because, like, the way you've set up, it's naturally going to, even if it's picked it up and dropped it, it's naturally going to come an inch or two nearer to your rod tip, because there's tension in it. As soon as you put it out, there's tension, because, you know, you've sunk it on a tight line, took up the slack, and put a bobbin with a weight on it. So I can tell you from you know, what happens if it was most likely a bird. But I think when a carp picks it up and shakes it off, and you know, the hook pulls out or whatever happens, and you just get a couple of beeps again, the same thing happens. Like, it usually drops it slacker than what it started, because it's going to have sprung back a little bit, you see, as it's pulled up. When you get them ones where you get a couple of beeps and it doesn't drop back slacker, it, like, the bobbin stays up higher than it was, I'm happy leaving those, because I don't really always think the lead's moved. I think something's... Say again.
I'm not. It could have, you know, stayed up like you just discussed, because the line's going over weed. But in that situation, I'm up. I'm, you know, the buzzer and bobbin have done its job. I'm looking at that point where the line enters the water.
Yes.
Any unnatural movement I see on that, both, I'm going to pick that rod up and give it a whack. And I've caught quite a few fish doing that, including one on Cromwell, first time we fished it.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
I had on Fen Drayton, when I first fished it, there was a lot less fish in there. Shitloads hadn't been dropped in at that point. It was kind of like the original stock, but only ever a small percentage of them used to get caught. And I remember getting a chance in the pipe corner one time. I'd been on there for a few days with my mate Dave, and we'd kind of sussed it out. We had to go looking for him in the boat. As soon as you found him, like, set up near them. Anyway, we had a chance this one night in the pipe corner, and the fish were nutting one after the other. Like, you know, to get on them with the fish showing on there was quite rare back then. It was like, you know, a once or twice a season opportunity. And it was like my second session on there, maybe first or second, I can't remember. And I've got this chance in this corner, and we dropped the bait out right on dark. We'd found these fish, managed to get rods out just as it was going dark. And I seen a bream show on the spot, but I'd seen a carp show about 5 times in a row. Or multiple carp right on the money. It was just like proper exciting, sat on our hands waiting for it to rip. And then a bream showed on the spot. I was just like, oh no. And I'd only fishing like 40 yards out or something, and been dropped from the boat on a tiny little cleared off gravel patch, definitely a feedy spot that had been turned over. And then we were getting liners and stuff as well, because there was fish in that corner. And then I had that 2 or 3 bleeps, and then it didn't beep again. And I'm like, have I been done? Is there a bream anchored? Because the bream in there were weird. They were all like big, like 14 to 18 pound. And but they never gave you any indication. We're fishing braid as well. I'm only fishing 40 yards out. And you sometimes reel all 4 rods in the morning, and there'd be a bream on each one, and you wouldn't know. You'd have no idea. There'd be a 15 pound bream on each rod. And it was weird on there, like how the bream just gave you virtually no indication. You might get a beep or two, but obviously when you're fishing sometimes 250 300 yards out on braid, like, it's not unusual to get a beep. And it's a bit of a trauma to try and put the rod out, especially if it's a middle one and you've got 3 rods at 300 yards or something, and you get a couple of beeps on one, you're not just automatically redoing that rod because of the stress involved. And then in the morning, you wind them all in, there's a bream on every one. You're just like, well, well, what time did they hang themselves? And there's, like, no other beeps. Anyway, we'd learned that used to happen on there. And I got these 2 or 3 bleeps. I'm just like, there's a bream anchored on the end. I know there is. And, like, I was with Dave, and it was just like, what do we do? Do I reel it in? Like, it's... If I go out in the boat again, there's a very good chance of spooking the fish that are out there. You know, what do I do? Do I sit and wait? and we're like, just give it half hour, see if it beeps. I'm like, but if we don't reel the rod in now, it's going to be too dark to put it out again. So it was a bit of a like, what do I do? Because I was like, if there's a bream on, it's going to beep again anyway. The curiosity got the better of me. I picked the rod up and reeled it in, and there was a bream on. It's like, it just didn't beep again. Little thing, 15 pound bream, whatever it was, proper specimens in there. I ended up just really struggling to get it back out because the wind was hammering into that corner. It was pretty choppy with the boat. It was really hard to see the spot. So it kind of went out a bit haphazardly, and then we never saw another carp show after that. We stayed up till just after dark and didn't see another fish show, and then I ended up getting a bite early hours of the morning, well, midnight or something. It's an absolute screamer. The most epic boat battle I've ever had. This fish did not want to come in. It went from weed bed to weed bed. You know when you're like sat over the weed bed almost pulling for a break?
Yeah.
There's Roger now, coincidentally trying to ring me. Almost pulling for a break, and it was in the end. Dave said to me, he was getting annoyed because he was steering the boat, and it was just like, I thought I was into a 100-pound carp, and like I just couldn't lift this thing up off the bottom, and if I did, it went in another weed bed. And then Dave said to me, when stop fannying about, like if you're going to lose it, just lose it, but at least do it on your own terms, you know, rather than let the fish like rule the roost. I was just like, do you know what, you're right. And then I give it the absolute death pull. You're like, just like something's going to give it, either the fish is going to come off, or like the line's going to snap, or the rod's going to snap or something. And it ended up coming up. I landed it, and it was the humpy back common. Went on to be quite a decent 40 common then. They'd just spawned, actually. It was 36 or 35, 36, something like that. It'd previously been 40. And it's known for fighting like that, apparently. Apparently it's a bit of a beast. But yeah, it was a pretty epic night. But I mean, it was that one of them, what's happened. Like, it's not often I don't know what's gone on. But it was just like, is there a bream anchored to it? And there was. But yeah, generally, I mean, give yourself the most opportunity to be able to, you know, differentiate between activity on your bobbins. I mean, do you relate to that? Do you set your bobbins in a way where you know, kind of, you know, even if you weren't looking out on the water, you know the difference between a coot picking you up or, you know, a bream? Or I mean, you can tell different species of fish by the bites, can't you?
What tells you that is experience.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, even
you've got a swinger, a hanger, a springer, it's experience that'll tell you what's happening on the other end. And obviously the only way to get experience is get out there on the bank and do it.
Yeah, with the old ledgering days, you know, when I used to use either a swing tip or a quiver tip, and you were kind of fishing, you know, like size 12 hooks, bit of corn on it, you know, ledgered or swim feeder or whatever. And that, I mean, before I started carp fishing, that was my favourite method of fishing, because you were fishing for specimen fish. You might catch a 2-pound roach, a 5-pound carp, a perch, not as many perch on the corn, but you did catch them occasionally, a bream, like, but you always knew what fish you'd caught by the bite. Like, you could tell if it was a tench, you could tell if it was a carp, you could tell if it was a bream, tell if it was a roach or a rudd, by the type of bite. So, you know, and I think that's, I mean, and that's just with a quiver tip or a button decayer, and I think it's exactly the same, with your bobbins, the way we set them up for carp. As long as you give yourself a chance for your bobbin to tell you something. If you've got it, you know, just drop down an inch, locked into a clip, you know, like a stow bobbin or whatever, locked into a clip, how on earth are you going to know what's, you know, what different things happened? You just ain't. So, Michael, we've answered that.
I've got the longest answer to what is a line bite ever.
Yeah, well, it's line bites are not always line bites, like you say. There's lots of different things when it.
Yeah. Cool. There's one more question, which, we've already pretty much covered. It was, that was regular listener, old Cletus Wally Winfield. How long do carp spawn for, and how long after would you fish for them?
Yeah, I mean, it's a contentious subject. We did touch on it early, didn't we? I mean, they generally don't spawn for more than 36 hours. I would say. But I mean, they can go off and on for a week depending on the water temperature. If it goes, you know, warm enough for them to spawn, and then it goes cold the next day, and then it goes hot again the next day, and you know, it can they can kind of be on teetering on the brink for a good few days, but generally it's not more than 36 hours, is it? And then they have another go quite often a week or two later. But I think they spawn in different groups.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. But he finishes it by saying, "I know people who will fish regardless, but that's not something that sits right with him." And that's damn right. A fish are spawning. Do not fish for them. Leave them alone. The only thing you're going to do is foul hook them.
I mean, we all know people that have had mega hits, you know, while the fish are spawning, because they do group up. But I've seen it where there's a big group of fish, and yes, they look spawny, and some are spawning, but they're not all spawning. The other half of them are feeding. You know, I remember Jim Shelley having a mega hit off Horton on that while, you know, the fish were looking spawny. He had God knows how many fish. You remember it a few years ago off that plateau, because it's quite a deep Lake Horton. This I forget what it's called, one of the swims. And he had like the plateau, three seasons worth of fish, and the fish were looking spawny. It's a very debatable subject. I mean, I'm not on the, as I said before, I'm not on the like first sign of spawning, let's just shut the lake and leave it shut for 2 weeks, because quite often, like, a small percentage, you know, you'd have it shut all summer if you're going to do that, because they will have multiple goes, and it's not all the fish spawning at one time. But I mean, if there's a spawning area on a lake, like, you know, there's one shallow area and that's where they go to spawn, just close that swim, just close that area, and you can leave that area shut for an amount of time, you know. I mean, that's easy. It's not always practical on lakes, but you know, if there's one shallow bay and they always spawn in that bay, then at the first signs of spawning, you can close that peg and then leave it closed for a few weeks. I mean, I think that's fair. And any fish that are not in that peg are not spawning and probably looking for food around the rest of the lake. But it is an awkward situation. I mean, we used to have the close season for that specific reason, to let all the fish spawn. And, you know, it used to be March the 16th. It's shut at midnight on the 15th, up until June the 15th. But quite often, I've fished many lakes where they haven't spawned on June the 15th. So we've just lost 3 months of the best fishing of the year, and they've not even spawned. You know, you come on and they spawn the third week in June. I've seen them spawn in July.
When Dave said Dave Moore, you know, when his fish spawned last year, September.
Yeah, well, do you remember the Simon Scott? Was it Simon Scott where he's telling us that they, you know, they do gather spawn again in the autumn, and they quite often do shed some spawn in the autumn. Yeah, I mean, the fish are kind of, you know, I used to think that they get fat with spawn in the spring, and then they lose it all, and then they just replace it with food during the course of the year, and then they hit the biggest weights in the autumn. That's not the case. They're gathering spawn again. You know, so I mean, I think when it's blatant, the weather's warm, then yeah, leave them alone. Or you know, ideally, if you can shut the area where they're spawning, then fine, don't let anyone fish near it, and there's no arguments, is there?
Exactly. If you see someone fishing for blatantly spawning fish, have a word.
Have a word. Yeah, cool. You've got worth a look, haven't you?
We have. I thought I'd have to put this one in. Carpology, you've got a summer special, and it's the first for a Carp magazine. There's same magazine, two different front covers.
Yeah, now,
now Lewis Porter, Foxfella, reveals how he caught two British 50s in 7 days, and the covers are both of his 50s, and they're arguably the best mirror and the best common in the land.
Certainly up there, aren't they? The Caravan Park linear, which is a good 50 linear, and the Wood Common from Spitfire Pool, which is another fantastic fish, out last week to a lad that I know from Manchester, Hargy. Fantastic carp. Yeah, I mean, what a week's fishing he had there. And yeah, I saw the two different magazines, two different covers. What's the content? Is the content different in both, or is it just the cover?
It's just the cover. I'll say it's a summer special, but there's 200
the one you want.
Pages.
If you'd rather have the linear.
Yeah, or if you want to put pictures of Lewis Porter on your bedroom wall, then buy both. Is that what you're doing?
This is sure Lewis has bought both. Yeah, I mean, Carpology is a fantastic magazine anyway. I always think with Carpology they've really kept up to date on the social media. You know, they've embraced it in the way that I love those little almost like clickbaity pieces that they do. Like, you know, I think they've got a very good knack of how they market the little pieces, just the sort of bite-sized pieces, like maybe, you know, how do your bobbins work underwater. There's always a clickbaity question, and then, you know,
it's clickbait, it's but there is actual content behind them, so it's not just some random clickbait to get you to an advert. It's there's interesting content, and if it's clickbait, then they catch me every time.
Me too. You know, I think they're great, and I love the fact that you know, that they've always been very ahead with the you know, with the progressive is the word I'm looking for. You know, sort of the digital media and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, we do like Carpology. I mean, it's probably aimed at the younger demographic, isn't it? I would say. But you know, I think they've, I remember when they started it, I remember it was a free magazine in the shops, and you know, it's turned into it's a quality read. I love the underwater stuff that's in there all the time as well. What else is in there? Have you bought it?
I will be doing probably this afternoon when we go shopping. I know what Morrison's has it in, but you've got features there: Terry Ayern, Ian Chilcott, Ollie Davis, Gaz Fairham, James Armstrong, Nigel Sharp, and more. And out of that list, not one of those has been our guest yet.
We need to go. I know Lewis Porter is booked in to come on and tell us the stories of the big fish and other stuff. His life working in the media, obviously works for Fox. So Lewis is coming soon. Who else? Yeah, I mean, I need to speak to him. I've not spoke to him for many years, but I've spoke to him over the years. Ollie Davis, we know personally and can certainly get him on. Gaz Fairham, I've contacted, said he would be up for it. I need to chase him up. Nigel Sharp, I haven't spoke to, but do need to speak to. It's a good little list there for us to get stuck into, I think.
That's usually when you see a list of anglers, you can think, yeah, we've had him. You know, we're booked in, but that's and they're all in Carpology. You know, we're a magazine there is with that lineup.
And talking of magazines, there is the digital version of Carp Talk came out on Saturday. It's Tuesday today when you'll hear this, which means you can also get the printed version today from your local paper shop. If they don't sell it, you can order it from there, or you can have a look at a list of stockists on the Carp Talk website. If you want the digital version, talking of progressive to your app, mobile stuff and laptop and everything else, you can get it. It's only $1.49. It's available from pocketmags.com if you're on your Apple device, Android or PC. As we mentioned earlier, Mark, there's Scott Lloyd, capture of bite mark 45¾ from Stone Acres. I know Scott's going to be coming on the show at some point as well. I know you've been speaking to him about a guest. I know he's had a lot of fish out of Stoney over the past couple of years. He's blogged a lot of it as well. He makes videos, which are always very entertaining. I've followed those for a long time. And
he's also known as Scott Noodle of his dietary habits.
Okay, a bit like you when you used to just eat tins of pasta la vista.
He lives off him.
And other stuff in this week's Carp Talk. You can check out the Fish with the Stars event with Tim Paisley's Mangrove Swamp and Birch Grove this summer. I'm interested to find out about that. There's a weekly Welly Whacker, another 50 for Clint Bullock. Go and check out which one it was in the Carp Talk. And there's loads of other 50s in there as well. 50s from the Avenue, Rosemere, Kingsmead, Clubley Top Lake, Horton Church has done a shed load of fish as well, and Elphix. There's a load of features in there as well, in the Mark?
There is. So Jason Jason Donaldson. He's on a new 40 from the Sitch. That's one of Rob Hailsworth's, that one, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I don't know it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And Harry Way back, he gets his year off to a flying start, so you know, can find out how he's done that. And you just mentioned Horton, Chris Cox gets his first taste of action on there, and I'm going to take a deep breath and start talking properly now.
Yeah, I never get sick about reading about Horton. So if you want to check out all those features, I'm pretty sure there's a competition this week as well, Mark.
There is. I've got more than £500 worth of Hull Particle goodies to give away. Are you going to enter?
I'm going to intend to enter. Whether I do, I'm not sure. But if you're listening to this as a Carp Talk purchaser, we want a Carpcast subscriber, listener, to win this competition every week. I believe not many people enter competitions. Everybody says they're going to, and nobody actually does it. And from my experience in watching TV programs, it's the same people that win competitions all the time because of that reason, because most people just don't bother because it's too much hassle. And I want to see a Carpcast listener winning that Carp Talk competition every week. So, guys and girls, get entering. We've already had one, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, once we started mentioning this. And I want us to have a clean sweep. So me and you should start doing it, Mark. We should start doing it every week. But I'm going to wait till the Summit Tackle one comes back again. That's it. That's the one I really wanted, a set of their bank sticks. But you can get this week's Carp Talk, the digital version, from pocketmags.com or from your local stock. We'll put the Carp Talk website, Carp Talk online website, in our show notes underneath. So thank you for listening. Check out our website, thecarpcast.com. Thanks again to dnabates.com. And I should be more settled next week. I shouldn't be looking at black bags and boxes everywhere, and hopefully we'll be a little bit more relaxed, and maybe even get some fishing in, Mark. I'm not sure.
Yes, I'll certainly be back at it. That's fishing this week has got me, now I've actually caught some carp amongst the Martin Luther Kings. I've got a text from a mate, as he called them. Have you ever heard that one?
No.
As in, I have a bream.
I have lots of bream.
Yeah.
Cool. So, that's it from us. We'll catch you next week.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.